Good afternoon, everyone. This is May 13th. We are convening informally at this time. We do not have a quorum of senators, but we do stand a week out from the constitutional deadline for adjournment, and wanted to keep moving. We made some good progress. We got started on Saturday. The House is hoping to continue that today. So the way we're going to do that, after consulting with Senator Nelson, is we will be able to walk through a number of provisions that are in the House bill that are similar, same, technical differences with the Senate bill, and then recess and come back and hopefully then be able to get some work done. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we have members that are in a variety of different conference committees, so I appreciate going through this today. And then I just have one other question, too, that would be helpful. I really appreciate the page number where we can find the exact text.
Sure.
But also, if your staff, when describing this, if they could somewhat give us an idea right up front if this is considered technical, similar, same, very similar, whatever your rating system is. I think we had technical, same, and very similar, but you may have something different. So
I think we had mostly similar and almost likely similar as well.
Okay, there you go. We just want to hear what that might be.
It's like going to the paint store and finding
the right shade of gray.
Exactly what I was thinking, Senator Nelson.
Potentially similar.
Could be hopefully similar. The same.
Yeah.
This is getting to sound more and more like the paint store. Taking it from the top, for members in the public, Article 1, Section 5, which will be found on page R3 of Article 1, is an absence from other side of the page. Stop that. Sorry. Let's try this again. We're going to, it's page one, down at the bottom.
Not Article 1, but page 1. Okay.
Check that out. Bottom center of the page, page numbers.
So we're on.
Love that.
Not Article 1.
All right, my apologies. We're going to start with Article 3, Section 58, which is found on page R47 in Article 3, and this relates to records related to the maltreatment of minors. Ms. Perra, good afternoon.
Thank you, Representative Chair Dabney and members. This section of the bill, the actual change, it's a House-only provision. The actual change to the language is on page R48, and it requires the Commissioner of Education to, when it's has maltreatment determination, to provide the maltreatment determination report to, say, Pelsby or BOSA, whichever is the appropriate licensing entity, with the student identifying information removed.
So, Chair Nelson, this is simply an effort on our part to protect the privacy of the mistreated child.
Thank you.
In those reports. We can now move on to a series of 5 provisions in our staying in Article 3 related to grants to prepare American Indian teachers. And we can just take them in order, starting on page R29. There are Article 3, House Sections 45, 46, 47, 48, and 49. So R29. Ms. Perra, is that you again?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
So these sections all affect the American Indian Teacher Preparation Statute. And from looking at the House language, sections 45, 46, 47, and 48, those are all technical differences. The substance of the language in both the House and Senate relates to getting rid of the use of loans, so it's all scholarships or grants. The chambers use different terms for that. And generally in all other substantive ways they're the same, but there's some small technical differences. As I said, sometimes using scholarships, sometimes using grants, and otherwise grammatical differences, and then the substantive difference on Section 49 of the House side and Section 16 of the Senate on page R30. There's some additional language on line 7215, continuing down to 7218 regarding priority for the grants.
Any question from members on those provisions? Chair Nelson, I think I see some differences. It looks like there's a difference in priority in the Senate. I'm looking at the bottom of R30, 72.15, 72.16, going on to R31. Can you speak to that? I don't believe we have that in the House bill.
Yes, and there was just a couple other brief differences, too, earlier. Actually, regarding priority, it's just how it's paragraphed. It's the same. Regarding priority with the grants, the intent of the Senate is to make sure that we can spread those grants as far as possible, so as many grantees are able to get that, what we think is an initial critical degree, which is that Bachelor's of Arts degree. And so the Senate put in additional language that would prioritize those who are seeking a bachelor's as opposed to someone seeking a higher degree like a master's or a doctorate degree. But of course we wanted to protect those who were already in a master's or a doctoral program. And that's why you see the line 72.18 having been enrolled before May 1, 2019. So we don't want to change the priorities for those who are already enrolled in a master's and a doctorate degree.
So, Senator, on that last portion of the provision, it is your intent to close the door then on prospective American Indian teachers being able to, who are looking for a master's, being able to access this going forward?
The idea is to give priority to those seeking bachelor's degrees. And we also know that folks who are moving on to those higher degrees, master's and doctorate degrees, would be able to help finance their own as opposed to working with those who have not yet been able to get financing for the bachelor's degree.
Representative Sanstein.
Madam Chair, if you could explain a little bit, I think the language also includes Associate of Arts. That's a two-year degree.
Yes, I'm not seeing the exact language that you're speaking to, but yes, thank you.
72.15 and 16.
Yes, thank you, Rep. Sandy. Yes, I misspoke. Obviously, we want Associate of Arts degrees too, bachelor's degrees. The thinking just being when we get to those higher order degrees of master's and doctorate, that we should be focusing our state grant on both the Associate of Arts and the bachelor's degrees.
Representative Verdal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a grant program was established, I don't know how long ago. I'm just wondering if anyone has any idea typically how much a grant is given for under this program.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is this the day you stump the nonpartisan staff, Representative Rudolph?
I don't know.
Or is there someone from the
Is there anyone in the room who can help us with that? Ms. Snyder. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, I believe I have that information available to me, but not at my fingertips right at this moment. So if you would prefer, I can email that to the members and staff versus stalling for time as I try to search through my
It's
we'll take the email at this point.
One comment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
It'd be important, too, for us to get a range. We know there can be a range. So if we could get the range, and then, of course, we can figure out the average, or you're welcome to tell us the average, but if we could have the range, that would be important, too.
Certainly, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, can you, when I'm looking at subdivision 9, this is line 72.5, the description of these grants basically is to provide grants to students progressing towards educational goals in any area of teacher licensure, including the Associate of Arts, and then it continues on, bachelor's, master's, or doctoral in the following, and it goes on. So how do these grants, how does the Associate of Arts fall into a teacher licensure, in your opinion, or how do you see that working together?
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Rep. Sandstead. I believe that any of these that are working towards teacher licensure would be included, and I do believe that there are Associate of Arts teachers who are able to teach under the Associate of Arts. It might not be a Tier 4, but my understanding is in some cases it could be an Associate of Arts. But the point is to get the grants into the hands of those who are interested in education, serving in education, particularly we would think teacher licensure, but we know we have four tiers in teacher licensure. We also know that sometimes there is someone who is teaching because there is no other teacher available at a certain tier level. So I think the idea is to be as flexible as we can with that, with the idea being to get as many teachers to be eligible for these grants if they're going into education.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you. I might not be understanding this correctly, but I think in teaching, even a Tier 1 requires a bachelor's degree.
Ms. Parra, can you, where would an Associate of Arts degree fit in within our tiered licensure system? Can you help with that?
Mr. Chair and members, for Tier 1, a candidate needs either a bachelor's, or if the candidate wants to teach a career and technical course, there are other requirements, and a bachelor might satisfy that. Associates, work experience, et cetera. There's various other ways to meet the criteria for Tier 1 if it's in the CTE area.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, just to add to
Senator Nelson,
there might be some help on your side of the table there, too, because the associates is included in the House language as well.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Chair Yukin.
Hey, Mr. Chair, and my question is, since we're really trying hard to recruit teachers of color, especially Native American teachers, if they're working in another field and really want to go into teaching, they may already have a bachelor's and their only doorway in is to go for a master's then. So I worry about walling that off because we could be losing out on some really good teachers that may need a little help to go towards that master's, but we're saying, no, you know, here's somebody who's wanting to switch their whole career to go into teaching and want to get that master's so they can start out on Tier 3, and we're telling them no, or that they have to go to the end of the line.
I think it's under the Senate language, it's a no, rather than simply a prioritization of these funds.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I draw your attention to line 72.15. We're talking about priority. So priority is different than a prohibition. So this is a priority. So we are saying prioritize those who are seeking the associate or bachelor's degree, and also make sure that those who are already enrolled in a master's or a doctoral program can also continue provided they're enrolled by May 1. And so, you know, there's certainly time where the legislature, we do meet on an annual basis, mm-hmm. and we do revise And I think it's important. One of the things that has been brought to my attention is making sure that and even in the legislation that I championed last year, or 2017, the Teachers of Color Act, you know, it's been brought to my attention that we need to know how that's working. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we are able to get the data to know what is really helping to move the needle. And I believe that hopefully as things go forward this year, we will be collecting the data that's going to help us make those decisions. And I am very confident that as we begin, again, we should be prioritizing on those associate and bachelor's, and as the legislature meets in future years and we have more data upon which to base our decisions, we would find out if what Chair Youakim is suggesting may happen. But the Senate's position is prioritize those who are getting started in education, mm-hmm. make in education preparation, and then prioritize dollars to those who are going to be teaching in our schools.
All right.
One more follow-up.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I also wonder how you got to the May 1st, 2019, since it seems like we'll be out of here after that, so it's almost retroactive.
Senator Nelson?
To the folks that instead of upon enactment, possibly.
Well, this was when the Senate language became public. So, in other words, as soon as we wanted to make sure that anyone who had enrolled before this was part of the discussion was able to continue.
And Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first, just a language issue. I do think that if we were going to go with the Senate language, there is a little bit of ambiguity in the way that that final sentence at 72.17, 72.18 just is written that was leading to some confusion about. I understand the goal is to prioritize, but it could be read to indicate that students who are not in a master's or doctoral program by May 1st, 2019 would not be eligible. So we just would have to clarify that. But the bigger point, I'll pause on that.
Oh, we should pause there. Thank you.
Fair enough.
Mr. Chair and Chair Pinto, actually that is the intention.
Oh, okay.
So that is the intention, to make sure that anyone who was previously enrolled can continue in those higher level degree seeking education opportunities. But going forward, we are going to prioritize associates and bachelor's preparations in education.
And Mr. Chair, with the ambiguity, thank you. That's how I would read the first portion of Subdivision 9, is that those in master's or doctoral programs are still eligible, just of a lesser priority or lower priority. But I think that there is some ambiguity there, since that final sentence, students progressing towards such a degree may be awarded a grant if they're enrolled in a program before May 1st, 2019. That implies that they would not be eligible if enrolled after May 1st. So I guess the question is just in terms of prioritizing versus eligible or ineligible. We just may want to clean that up. But it may not be necessary
Senator Nelson, you're saying the Senate's intent is to make people like the career changers that Representative Youakim addressed ineligible after May 1st of this year if they already have a bachelor's.
Yes.
Okay.
And then let's.
That's the clarity I think we've been struggling for.
Mr. Arneson may have some clarity, further clarity on how the language is written in the Senate and what the intent is.
Mr.
Arneson. Mr. Chair, and maybe this isn't consistent with what Senator Nelson just indicated, but to Representative Pinnell's point about clarifying the priority in those four lines on the Senate side, I might suggest maybe the priority aspect could be clarified,
right.
You know, setting aside the eligibility question, if that sentence read, the grantee institutions and the contracted partner institutions must give priority to grants for students progressing toward an Associate of Arts or Bachelor's degree, or to students progressing toward a Master's or Doctoral degree if they were enrolled in the degree granting program before May 1st, 2019, and maybe add some ones and twos to make sure that the enrollment deadline clearly applies only to those in the master's or doctoral degree programs.
Bingo.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Senator Nelson.
And again, the point is priority, not preventing. So if I misspoke on the preventing side, I want to make sure that this is about priority and how we prioritize, but also making sure that we are truly making sure that those who are already enrolled in such a program are not in any way penalized.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good, that was exactly the point, that it felt like there was some ambiguity. I think Mr. Arneson's suggestion would clear that up. However, though, moving to my second point, since this is about Indian American Indian teachers, I'm wondering, this feels like something that would really benefit from, or I'm wondering if it has benefited from the input of the community actually affected, because it seems to me that I would want to know what would be prioritization that folks from that community be interested in. There may have been testimony already, but that seems like kind of the most critical point from my perspective.
Senator Nelson?
I don't have a comment on that, but
okay.
One additional thing that I know that I have wondered that we could perhaps get some additional comment on. Rep. Pinto, remember where we first met on the board that we served upon? I think it was called Education Excellence. And one of those, one of our tasks and responsibilities was to distribute the Ethel Murray Indian Scholarship for teacher preparation. And as I look at this, I'm wondering if someone, I don't know, that was a few years ago, and I'm just wondering if there's an update on what the Ethel Murray, and we don't have to do that today, but as we look at things and as we prioritize, because I think we, you know, whether it's priority in awarding grants here or in the general education bill, we are going to have to prioritize expenses. And that's one thing that I'll want to look at is what are we doing regarding that Ethel Murray scholarship for Indian educators?
Representative Pinto?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just note that particular scholarship, I believe, gave equal support for both bachelor's students and also for master's students, as it turns out. So, but I would love to know what the American Indian, if there's any input from the community, and that may be something we would need to get before resolving this or not. And maybe somebody in the audience who would have that, but that does seem like an important point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on. Next, Article 8. Section 3 and 5 regarding the voluntary state's voluntary pre-kindergarten program, found on R1 and R3 of Article 8. Yeah. Ms. Pera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So Section 3 relates, the change that it's making is specifying that the measures that are used have to be age appropriate. That change appears on line 230.12 to 230.13. So,
Ms. Pera, this is an assessment done when the child enters the voluntary pre-K program at presumably the age of 4, and when they leave again, presumably at the age of 5. Am I correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Pinto, any insights to share?
No, Mr. Chair. It seems like it should be straightforward. I'm not quite certain if this was one of those that was part of the supplemental budget bill that passed last session. But in any case, it should be a pretty simple clarification. But I believe it may have come from that.
Okay. Thank you. And then Section 5 on page R3. Ms. Pera?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that Section 5, starting on page R3, it makes several changes. And I believe the one that you were looking at is on paragraph C. Right now there are four areas. The Minneapolis and St. Paul School District are in the same group for purposes of awarding for purposes when the program was first established, and this change would split up the Minneapolis and St. Paul districts into two separate areas. It would not affect the current allocation of funds. And then there are other changes in the statute in that section, but I believe that was the portion of the change that you were looking at.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Perrin. And was this in last year's right. bill?
Mr. Chair, I believe it was.
Thank you.
That's all I was going to say. Okay.
Questions on that? Okay. Thank you. Staying in Article 8, but moving down to Articles 12 and 13, found on page R12. Ms. Carroll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. These two sections allow, so Section 12 first allows tribal organizations to contract with the Commissioner of Human Services to conduct background checks. And then Section 13, it's Head Start programs, the same change, allowing contracting with DHS for those background checks. And I believe this was part of the 2018 bill. These are the two changes.
Okay, thank you. And good enough. Questions on that? Hearing none. Let's move back to Article 7, Section 1, regarding lunches. How about meals? Meals. I assume we don't just deal with lunch. So Article 7 is awfully thin. Madam Chair, I don't know if you saw, there was a school district, I think late last week, there was a question about whether students were going to be able, graduating seniors were going to be allowed to walk across the stage. And Philando Castile's mother, with the fundraising that's been done for that foundation, and since he was a school food service worker, used foundation funds, paid off all of the seniors' outstanding debts. So those kids who had earned the right to walk across the stage would be able to do that and receive their diplomas.
Yes,
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did see that, and I applaud that move. And just to add, when this first started coming to light in 2017, actually, mm-hmm. about this time, it just happened that my mother-in-law was in hospice at the time, mm-hmm. and she was hearing these stories about kids being denied a lunch at school. And what was interesting, and we did not know this until after she passed, but that was one of her designations, that all of the memorial money that came in would go to pay for lunches, so no kid in Belmond would go without a lunch.
Wonderful.
So I do know that this is of great interest, mm-hmm. and I know the Senate has language in that gives our school boards the flexibility to design that policy and public post it in a way that needs to be made sure that all are aware. And I would hope that we would see our superintendents and school boards look at the example that mm-hmm. we saw yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ms. Pera, is this same, similar, technical? How would you describe the differences between the two bills?
Mr. Chair, so the difference is that the House has additional language that the okay. Senate does not. So if you look at Subdivision 1, paragraphs A and B are the same. And then the House has additional paragraphs C through F. So those are requirements that the policy would have to meet, things like addressing whether a collections agency would be used, not withdrawing meals that have been placed on a tray, mm-hmm. if the school contracts with a third party, making sure the third party has a copy of the policy. And then there are additional changes or differences. If you look on page R3, the House has some additional language in subdivision 4, lines 222.15 to 222.18. And then the House also has an additional subdivision 5. I'm sorry, so the House breaks Subdivision 4 into two subdivisions and adds some language, the bulk of which is in Subdivision 5, and that's putting some more requirements regarding, for example, prohibiting dumping meals, fixing stickers, other reminders of the unpaid balances. And then there's an additional paragraph that requires the commissioner to send a letter of non-compliance if the participant is not complying with its policy, is not serving meals in a respectful manner, and giving the participant time to some 30 days to remedy the practice.
And
Senator Nelson.
And Mr. Chair, just a very brief comment on that. So the Senate language provides local control in how to serve respectful and respect all students, particularly when it comes to maintaining the dignity of all students and prohibiting lunch shaming. Mm-hmm. That's very clear in the Senate language. It does allow local control in how to do that. The House language seems to be a bit more on the side of trying to micromanage, which should be how the school boards, those local elected officials, determine how best to maintain the dignity of every student by prohibiting lunch shaming. Mm-hmm. So just mm-hmm. a difference in approach.
I think the House's approach is more about an assurance of a floor by which all students are treated and their families. You know, for instance, the requirement that they be informed if there's a collection agency because of the damage that can do to a family's credit score, for instance.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I would like to just draw the committee's attention to the Senate language in 1.13.16-18. That policy must be in writing, clearly communicate student meal charges when payment cannot be collected at the point of service, and then the policy must be reasonable, well-defined, and maintain the dignity of students by prohibiting lunch shaming. So I think that is a floor.
But that's what the discussion is for.
Exactly.
All right. Any other questions? All right. That should put us down, moving back to Article 5, Sections 4 and 5, related to school possession of student medication and then the responsible disposal of those medications when, if I understand it correctly, either a student leaves the school or at the end of the school year. And it's R4, and yeah, both are on page R4 of Article 5. Ms. Perra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, so this is the House language, Section 4. It requires a parent to inform the school of the drug or medication that's stored at the school if it's a controlled substance. And if it is, then the request has to include a provision designating the district, authorizing the district to transport that medication, and specifying that the parent has to retrieve the drug when requested by the school. Section 5 relates to the disposal of unclaimed drugs or medications, and requires the district to adopt a procedure for the collection and transport of those medications. And then also, there's also a provision if they're not controlled substances, the school would have to designate somebody responsible to transport those medications to a drop-off site or request that law enforcement transport those medications. And finally, paragraph C, if the medication is a controlled substance, prohibiting the district or school personnel from transporting the prescription drug.
Representative Youakim.
Just to say, Mr. Chair, we had some good conversations and policy around this with the school nurses in support because they needed more clarification. And I can't remember, Ms. Perra, was this in last year's bill as well?
Ms. Perra?
Mr. Chair, Representative Youakim, yes, this was included in the 2018 bill.
Thank you. Questions? Let's keep moving along. Senator, are you prepared to talk about your school floor plans, as we understand it, sharing those with the local fire department on Article 5, Section 2, page R3? So close to where we are.
Yes.
Starts on... Barely yeah. starts on R3. Please, Senator.
Exactly. We have the section number. All right. So, yes, members, the language is on R4. Last year in the 2018 omnibus bill, the Senate had a fairly large, well, I guess we all did, it was in the omnibus bill, we had a $75 million for school safety. Mm-hmm. And we noticed as we went through the interim that other states also are addressing school safety. And one of the areas that we did not address in that initial piece was to make sure that our districts and charter schools provide the law enforcement agency or the emergency management officials who are serving that school district or charter school with a school floor plan or map that shows where the doors are, where the windows are, where the exits are, stairways, room numbers, other things that could be helpful. And we do know that, I know in the case of fire, as I've done several ride-alongs with our fire departments, and we have a number of, and I imagine Minneapolis and St. Paul might be the same way too. You know, we have a number of large buildings in Rochester, and it's important for those.
You're kind of known for them.
And so it's important that, in this case, the fire, firefighters know that kind of the ins and outs of those buildings as they're going into a dangerous situation and how better to make it safe. And then even my office, which is not a large building, which is a small building, this is our business office, lo and behold, the fire chief came and said, you know, we'd just like to take a look at your floor plan and make sure that we know where everything is. So, you know, and you know, we hope we don't need to come here on an emergency, but if we do, we want to be prepared. And so that just made me think that we want to make sure that we do the same with our emergency responders to our schools. It's very important. And many of these could be online or they could be actual documents as well.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pinto?
Just wondering, Mr. Chair, if the if there's any input provided directly by law enforcement. I understand the seems like it makes intuitive sense, but just wondering if law enforcement or firefighters or any other statewide associations provided any input on this.
Senator Nelson?
We've not had any opposition to this at all. You might recall that Wisconsin had also, although they had also passed some pretty significant school safety legislation, and this was one of the pieces that they had included that I noticed seemed to be an omission in our original bill. So I think that's one advantage of you know, continuing to monitor what's happening in other locales as well.
Now, it's been more than a few years since I've been involved in this area, but I seem to recall that blueprint copies are quite expensive. So this would be an unfunded mandate on the schools. There's not any finance tied to reproduction of blueprints?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was something that I wondered about as well, because those blueprints are expensive. However, this is a floor plan, so we specifically did not say a blueprint. Those blueprints include a lot more than what we see as necessary, but I do trust that our school districts are having ongoing conversations with their emergency safety officials, emergency management folks, and I know individual counties have, you know, these emergency management departments, and I'm confident that our school districts are having conversations about what can or cannot be or must be included. But again, we had no opposition. It was not considered an unfunded mandate.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would expect that most school districts and most schools have floor plans already. That shouldn't be difficult to obtain. I think they already have them.
I think it probably depends on what level of detail. I know my junior high student handbook had a floor plan. Is, you know, does that meet the needs when it probably doesn't include a lot of information that emergency responders may find of value?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson. Let me just direct again to the actual lines in the bill so that you can get a sense of this. And those specifics are listed on line 84.8 and 9 with a school floor plan or map that shows doors, windows, stairways, room numbers, and other information useful to first responders in crisis situations. I would assume that our first responders will indicate, you know, when they get those plans, are there other things that need to be included? And I do believe that everyone is very much focused on making our schools safe and secure, and I have no doubt that there will be great coordination in what's going to be helpful and what data our emergency management officials would like.
Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to things we can't see, taste, or smell, and that would be radon. Page R2 of Article 6. Ms. Pera?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The House modifies Section 123B571 on radon testing. By adding charter schools and the Purpert Center to the to Subdivision 1 and making that, with regards to the plan that they that these schools have to adopt, and then Subdivision 3 on the reporting, again, adding charter schools and requiring that the testing be available to the public. Subdivision 4 sets forth the requirements for the testing, requiring a testing schedule, conducting the radon testing in accordance with national standards, and stating that if the radon level in the frequently occupied room exceeds a certain level, then the district or charter would have to mitigate or take corrective action.
All right. Thank you. Any questions on radon? It's part of our school or student safety requirements or school student safety provisions in the bill. Care 11 did a investigative report, something like that, on radon in schools and testing and reporting. And we saw that and saw a need to act. And then Senator, staying in Article 6, you have some language on the notification of environmental hazards on page 1.
Yes.
Let's get back to page 1 then. Can you speak to that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this gets to a safe environment for our students, and specifically on lines 106.28 through .33, if the Department of Health or the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency notifies a school district or a charter school or a non-public school of any environmental hazard that could affect the health of its students or school staff, we believe that's important that the school notify school staff, students, and parents of those hazards as soon as practicable, of course. And the notice must include direction on, you know, how you could obtain additional information about that hazard, any actions that could reduce potential harm to those affected by the hazard. And again, we don't always know every single hazard that is going to pop up, but if, in fact, something has been identified by the Department of Health or the PCA, that we want to make sure that parents are aware.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is,
yeah,
what if it's not something that the Health Department or PCA knows about? What if it's something that the school district knows about? Mm. Should they be notifying? I think they should be notifying the parents as well then.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Erdahl. The language is
close, but not quite.
Representative Erdahl, I apologize. The language is specific to a known hazard identified by the Department of Health or the PCA. But this is a Senator Wieger provision, and maybe you'd like to add some more to that, Senator Wieger.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. This came out of the awareness of trichloroethylene emissions that had occurred for 17 years in White Bear Lake. The comparable provision in the House is being championed by Representatives Fisher, Wozloak, Becker Finn and others. And so the legislation was a result of several meetings in the district. There's actually conferenced are some other provisions on trichloroethylene right now in the environmental finance. And this basically says that if the department, PCA, or the health department is aware of a hazardous emission, that then the staff, the students, parents will then be made aware of what's happened. And in this case, the risk of cancer and a number of other things was made clear to area residents in a mile and a half area. There's been many meetings in the schools, hundreds of people. It's been on the news, so you probably are aware of it. And but in some cases, the parents weren't aware. They may not have seen it on Facebook or on TV, and so this just puts in a hazardous emission issue that there would be this type of information going out. And in terms of the type of information, the Department of Health or the PCA, they're going to have an accompanying sheet with information as to what to do if you have questions, where to go. So it would be providing that information to the stakeholders that are listed here, parents, staff, students. In terms of Representative Erdahl's question, if the school is aware of a hazard, I would hope that they would promptly, I would assume they would let the Department of Health, the PCA, other enforcement agencies be aware of that. I would assume there would be that type of reporting duty and this type of notice would trigger. But this does not put in a reporting notice by the school district or others to the state entity. I guess it's assumed.
Senator, no, I'm doing it. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assumptions are good, but they sometimes don't have the desired results. And I'm suggesting that perhaps we should consider including in the section that individual school districts also notify if there is an environmental hazard that takes place within their schools. I had a case a few years ago of a vial of mercury dropped in one of our schools in my district. Mm-hmm. And, it certainly made the news. I don't know if the school reported it out as well, but, in something like that, I think they should.
I think, Representative Erdahl, when you and I went to school, mercury was something fun to play with in science class. Senator Wieger, it's no longer something fun to play with in science class.
Correct. And Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I think that's a friendly suggestion.
Senator Wieger, I recognize you may not know this, but given the language of this provision, are MPCA or Department of Health required to notify school districts if there's been a hazardous emission?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. So we're relying on the good graces of the MPCA and MDH to notify the school districts.
And, Mr. Chair, I did ask them to prepare this language that you have here.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I maybe want to circle back since we're talking about this, too, and the hazardous chemicals and cancer causing. We know, and all the studies show, that radon can cause cancer as well. So I would hope that, we want to make sure that our districts are testing for that. I know this language was in the governor's provision and had been worked out with the school district. So if along that line on health and safety for kids, I think the radon language is really important.
Thank you. Moving down the list, energy reduction. We've got Article 6 still, now Provision 5, Section 5, I should say, on page R3. And we have Ms. Pera. Is this same, similar, technical? What are the distinctions here?
Mr. Chair and members, the difference between the House and Senate language is may versus must. On line 212.16 of the House language, the House says that a district reporting may enter the utility consumption data into the B3 program. The Senate says that the school must enter and maintain that data. And both chambers have language later on saying that a district would not be penalized for failing to comply with the section.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And with that, we get to flip the page. So now we go back where I tried to start with Article 1, absence for religious observances on Article 1, Section 5, found on page R3 of that article. Ms. Pera?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 5 requires a school board to provide annual notice to families on the district's policy on a student being absent from school for religious observance. And Section 6 allows a school board to consider the community's religious observances when adopting an annual school calendar.
Representative Youakim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this up. It's kind of timely now that we just finished up with Rosh Hashanah not too long ago. Schools are usually looking out at their calendars at least 2 years in advance, and in 2021, since Labor Day is so late, and I know, Madam Chair, you're familiar with this subject as much as I am, the Tuesday after that Labor Day is Rosh Hashanah, so schools would be starting on Rosh Hashanah. So that's bringing up a lot of concerns, and this language still puts it all into, you know, local control. They can notify parents just on the website, so it's not an unfunded mandate, but I think it's just good public policy.
Questions on that? Then, so that covered sections 5 and 6? Okay, very good. Then, Madam Chair, we have a lengthy number of items related to PELSB as an entity, as a state agency. So what we'd like to do for this is bring up the agency so that they can help us understand these provisions and how they would operate. So, Ms. Luigi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And we are starting on page R3 in Article 3 with Section 4. And then we go, hang on, folks, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, skip 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, skip 21, 22, jump over to 26, 33, 34, and 35. You've got a lot of ground to cover there.
I got all day.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. My name is Alex Liuzzi. I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. And we'll start with House Article 3, Section 4. When tiered licensure went into effect, the way we use the word license and permission changed slightly. So this just adds the word permission to the definition of a teacher, so that an individual who is licensed in one area but teaching in a permission in another area is not suddenly removed from the definition of permission of teacher.
Keep going.
All right.
Invite members to let us know if you've got questions or need anything repeated or clarified.
Great. House Article 3, Section 5. We use licensure field and licensure area interchangeably in rule, and this would just clarify that in statute. We hired two lawyers for the first time in our agency, so they have helped us clarify some pieces that we want to make sure are clear across the board between rule and statute. House Article 3, Section 6. Actually, both that one, 6 and 7, work together. So in rule, we define provider and program differently. A teacher preparation provider is the unit, the entity that provides licensure programs. So this clarification just makes sure that the correct language for provider is used and the correct language for program is used. We use different words, non-conventional, alternative, whether we're talking about providers or programs. So it's just a clarification of what we actually use in rule in those areas. House Article 3, Section 8. This is not a technical change. Those other pieces were fairly technical. The board is currently an 11-member board with 6 active teachers. However, we have 2 committees that are run by teachers, the Discipline Committee and the Licensure Committee. And the both committees used to be 2 teachers on that committee, and we have moved them to three. With that increase in workload and the members of the board being volunteers, we request two additional members who are teachers to help offset that workload for the discipline and the licensure committees. House Article 3.
Senator Nelson, one moment, please. Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, have you seen an overload? I mean, the new licensure, Helsby's relatively new. Don't think you've had your first birthday yet. But I just want to know if you've seen any type of overload currently.
Mr. Luisi.
Present.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. Yes, the workload both for discipline and licensure is fairly hefty. They take home a stack about this big of paperwork either for discipline or the licensure committees, and all the teacher members have sort of emphasized the need to be able to spread that work out. Next item, House Article 3, Section 9, the board composition. This just clarifies a couple pieces. One is the teacher preparation provider member. There was some confusion in the initial legislation if this person should be within teacher preparation and had been an active classroom teacher, or if this person has to be an active classroom teacher and then as a second job working in teacher preparation. This language clarifies it to make sure that this fits the teacher preparation provider role. That is their central job, but they had at one point been an active teacher in Minnesota for 5 years. The other piece is similar language, except for clarifying the special ed administrator role, that person also was an active licensed teacher for 5 years before they moved into that role. House Article 3, Section 10. We have moved locations as of 2 hours ago. They're moving the boxes right now, so this provision is no longer needed. House Article 3, Section 12. There is in Statute 122A.092, we have the authority to write rule for the alternative pathway statute 2451, but it wasn't included in this section. So, again, our lawyers suggested that we close the loop on our rulemaking authority by putting 122A.2451 into this section as well. House Article 3, Section 13. We provide a report every year on teacher preparation providers, and there's two changes that we've suggested here. One is, instead of using the word graduate, because of alternative pathways and individuals who might complete a licensure program but not receive a degree, we would like to change that to program completer. It would be more inclusive alternative pathways and more inclusive of who is being represented in the data that we're showing. Additionally, the surveys that teacher preparation providers currently use for collecting data is the supervisor survey once that individual has been teaching for a year. Current statute has it as during their student teaching placement, but we use that survey as the current student survey, and this would allow us to get information from the supervisor after that individual has left the classroom and been teaching for a year. So again, switching student teacher to program completer to align with what the surveys are currently doing, and we think to provide fairly substantial data on how that's going, how teachers are doing it a year out of the classroom. Moving on to House Article 3, Section 14. 14 and 15 go together for us. That is for Pelsby. It's just making sure right now it says college and universities. Again, just mean more inclusive to alternative pathways. By the way, we have three now approved or conditionally approved in the state, which is huge. That's just happened in the past 6 months. This would make sure that those alternative pathways are kept under the same statute as all teacher preparation providers. Article 3, Section 16. Again, this was the ability for us to extend everyone's license for a year during the transition. This has already happened. So if your renewal date was 2020, you will move to 2021. That has happened for all licensed teachers. They can see it in their license details. So this is an obsolete statute at this point.
Cleaning up statute books.
House Article 3, Section 17, there's actually a few pieces here that relate to background check. Some of these changes are actually similar to what was already discussed for tribal nations and Head Start programs. What we have done as an agency is currently an initial licensed teacher only has to do a background check when they first apply for licensure, and that is just a background check that looks backwards. At that point, we do not do any further checking in the future. That check has to be through the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. All three changes here allow us the flexibility, if we are able to work with DHS, the Department of Human Services, to use their background check service that also puts teachers into a system that we call a wrap-back system, that if they commit a crime while they are teaching, we are immediately informed. So it provides an extra benefit to our agency to be able to work with DHS. And all three of these areas clarifies that. I think the first two, Section 17 and Section 19, clarify that for initial background check, and then Section 34 adds it for licensure renewal.
If you'd pause for just a moment. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Is that charged with a crime or committed the crime that it's reported?
Mr. Luisi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's a great question, and I would need to talk to our ethics specialist about that. They use a database called MNSIS, and I believe that is charged with it is when it shows up there, but I am not certain of that.
Representative Pinto.
I work with MNSIS a lot as prosecutor. It's all the court records, any court records that come up, that's what the database is, for what that's worth.
So, Representative Pinto, that would mean charged in layman's language?
It would mean charged. For in criminal cases, it would mean charged, correct. Yeah, it would not simply be convicted. If any sort of court action, so when a prosecutor brings a charge against somebody, that would be included.
Oh. Representative Erdahl, you're good?
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Luisi, thank you.
Thank you. Moving to House Article 3, Section 18. So we charge $57 for a license application fee, and that's in statute. What was put into the temporary military license piece, I believe at the time, was included the background check fee. So it's, I believe in the current statute, it's $87.50, which is actually the licensure application fee plus the background check fee. That background check fee changes, and I think also a credit card fee, the online credit card fee, was added to that. So this just clarifies that the temporary military license should be $57, the same fee that we charge for all license applicants. It won't be more. And then the background check fee would shift as background check fee changes with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension out of our hands.
Okay.
So I'm skipping Article 3, Section 19. We'll discuss that one. Article 3, Section 20. Your House research staff, is nonpartisan research staff, is amazing, by the way, and they really helped us with the licensure via portfolio sections. So this section, it removes the licensure via portfolio language from one section and moves it to a fee section. So most of what happens here is fairly technical, sort of a fee base, but there is one piece that is not technical, and that is changing, adding the word Tier 3 to licensure via portfolio. And that just aligns what we see, the tiered licensure structure, where an individual can receive a Tier 3 license by going through the licensure via portfolio process to make sure that is clear in portfolio.
If you'd pause for a moment. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lizzi, say your name again, please.
Liuzzi.
Liuzzi. It's good for me not to look at it and just to hear it. Beautiful name, by the way. All right. What I wanted to know, it was before the tiered licensure piece, and I wanted to look, if you could look on page R10, just up a page, line 18. I'm just a little curious, why is it that Pelsby may contract with the Commissioner of Human Services to conduct those background checks and obtain background check data? Why is it may? This seems like something that would be a must.
Mr. Luizzi.
There you go. Liuzzi. We could practice it all night. We'll move on. But thank you.
That's my homework for the evening.
Mr. Dabney and I are writing down the phonetics down here.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, it's a great question. So when we started this process a year ago, we had been looking into multiple different pathways that would allow us to access that background check at the lowest cost to the state, but the highest level of background check that we could find. We have recently settled on the Department of Human Services, if statute passed, for that to be the choice that we would select. But in the process, we had a may here in case we ended up using one of those other background check services. There are many that that do some of those services. CLEAR was another organization that we worked with very closely for a while, but we have settled on the Department of Human Services.
Thank you. That's fine.
All right. Mr.
Liuzzi. Hey. Okay. That's Article 3. Section 22 and 26. I'll do those two together. We have received lots of information specifically from the Department of Education around their visiting teacher program and their inability to bring visiting teachers in who are coming in on a Tier 1 or a Tier 2 license, but they can't get the visiting teacher visa, the J-1 visa, until they are officially have the license. And yet by statute in 2017, we can't issue their Tier 1 or Tier 2 until July 1st of that year. So these two pieces would allow us to bring in individuals on a work visa to give them that Tier 1 or Tier 2 license before July 1st so they're able to get that visa in time. Okay, House Article 3, Section 33. This is for licensure renewal. So there is a paragraph that talks very broadly about licensure renewal requirements for teachers, including just professional growth. And what was put into that paragraph was a few things. One, cultural competence training. Two, meeting the needs of English language learners. And then at the end of that paragraph, it said a teacher may submit their summative evaluation to waive everything in the above paragraph. When our board looked at that, below that waive are all the what we call the statutory requirements of reading reading strategies, positive behavior intervention strategies, mental health training, and suicide prevention training. We thought that the cultural competence training and the meeting the needs of English language learners fit that category more than something that could be waived just by submitting the summative evaluation. So this section deletes it from that top paragraph and moves it to a renewal requirement for all teachers. Article 3, Section 34 is similar to the background check piece that we were talking about before. The one difference here is this adds it to a renewal when teachers apply to renew their license. And again, this would do a couple things. It would do a backwards check, but then also put all of those teachers into the ongoing renewal check. So it actually would only need to happen for a teacher's renewal once, and then we wouldn't need this provision after 5 years after all teachers were put into that new system. I am continuing to work with MMB and the Department of Human Services to make sure that we have the fiscal note right around this. It's a little bit confusing of what happens when we add a renewal requirement that is a fee but processes through another agency and goes to teachers, and how does that work? So you'll see today we were trying to finish up that fiscal note. That should be coming soon on this provision. And then last would be Article 3, Section 35. This does similar to the other areas where it makes sure that alternative pathways language is clear so that it's not just colleges and universities everywhere in here, but teacher preparation providers are now more broadly including alternative pathways.
Any questions for Mr. Liuzzi on any of these provisions? Senator Nelson? Okay. Mr. Liuzzi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have three remaining provisions to look at before we recess. Article 4, Section 2 on individual education programs. That's found on page R1 of Article 4.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Pera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are these same similar technical differences we have with the Senate on this first provision?
The House has additional language to the Senate.
As we so often do. Thank you. Yes, there we go.
There's multiple pieces that the House has additional, but there's just a couple that I'm going to focus on. And the first is on page R2, on the House side, line 159.33, it's highlighted there that House has language that says that an IEP team, after affirmative approval of the parents, may eliminate the benchmarks or short-term objectives unless the student takes alternative assessments. So that's one piece. And then going down to page R3, paragraph D there, both the House and Senate have language relating to a functional behavior assessment. The Senate has additional language saying that a parent may request that the district conduct a comprehensive evaluation, whereas the House simply says that the FBA, the functional behavior assessment, may be conducted as a standalone evaluation without doing a comprehensive evaluation.
All right.
And then skipping down to page R13 for Article 6, excuse me, Section 16 of Article 4.
Mr. Chair, Section 16 establishes, it requires the commissioner to establish a working group to, on prior written notice, to make recommendations for improving alignment between state and federal requirements on prior written notice.
And Section 18.
Section 18, Mr. Chair, and that is on page R16, requires the commissioner to amend a rule to allow but not require an IEP to report a student's performance on state or district assessments.
Okay. Questions on any of those final three provisions regarding special education? Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope if there's any questions, we can find out which direction, you know, where there's some opposition, because I know this whole provision around the special education paperwork is really important. A lot of folks had worked on it over the summer. A lot of the stakeholders came and spoke in committee, and what you see in the House language has 99% approval by all the stakeholders. There's still a little bit of discomfort, but I'd like to hear where the Senate is on that as well.
Senator Nelson?
Comment that I know is important to our Senate members, and that has to do with PACER. Where is PACER, the advocacy group for children with disabilities, the very children that we're speaking about here? And so did PACER, of the House only provisions that we discussed here, what was PACER's position on these?
Representative Youakim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to put words in their mouth, but if my memory is correct, I think the short-term objectives was the one place where they, and I'm seeing a nod, is the one place where they still had a little bit of discomfort, but the rest they were fine with. I don't know if we want to have phone a friend. No, we'll just leave it at that.
We'll just leave it at that. Any other questions? So, Senator, the House would like to recess for a bit to accommodate the Senate. We're still waiting for Senate members to arrive. We've been in session as conference committee for over an hour now and have not seen enough senators for quorum. We'd like to get some work done today. You have to go back and think and chat about these provisions, I understand. I'm hoping, how long do you think that will take, and then how long until we get enough senators for the conference committee to get some work done?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we were glad to get a quorum on Saturday. We're hoping to get a quorum today, but we do know that, as I said, there are at least three other conference committees meeting, which are in the process of either, I'm not sure if they were advocating or
Hey! We have a quorum. We're now officially in order for May 13th, excuse me. Welcome, Senator Eichhorn. Thank you for coming to work today.
I've been at work.
Oh, very good.
Thank you, Senator.
Very good.
Unfortunately, it's hard to be in three spots at once.
It is. Time. Thank you for coming to the Education Conference Committee. Didn't mean to misunderstand that. So we're discussing a recess now that we have quorum.
So, Mr. Chair, we need to, and then also we'll want to get our other members as well. So what I'd suggest is as soon as we can get our other two members, get together, go over the proposal that you have here. What we'd like to do is I'll call you as soon as we are able to corral everyone and come to something that we can bring back, and hopefully it will be tonight.
Well,
or today.
Senator, I expect us to continue to work today. 4:30 be acceptable? Give you a chance? I would certainly hope that your members are prioritizing the education of the students of the state are able to gather. As they have stepped out of this conference committee, they could certainly step out of competing
Chair?
Conference committees if that's what's
Mr. Chair, certainly, as I've mentioned before, the Senate has half as many members to cover the same committees as the House does, so you must understand that our members are stretched pretty thin. We would need probably at least an hour to bring our folks up to date, assuming we can get them right away. So I would suggest that, I will call you when we get everyone corralled, get mm-hmm. them out, have able to go through the fine documents that you've provided today. I think 6 o'clock would be probably a little bit more realistic, only because we need to, as I said, probably have at least an hour with them as we get them all together, or maybe we'll have to do that individually too. My hope is we can get everyone together at one time. I think 6 would be more realistic, but the bottom line is I'll call you. But I know that you need to know, and members need to know, have some sort of idea too about what's a realistic number or time. And just my gut instinct, knowing how things work here, I would suggest 6 o'clock. But you've got the gavel. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, though, I will definitely give you a call when we have something that we can bring back to you.
Well, Madam Chair, I am concerned about the public. They need some guidance, whether they're, following us on TV today, since I know we're televised, or the folks in the audience.
Mr. Chair, that's why I suggested 6 okay. is a more realistic time for those who aren't living here at the Capitol right. or who have other things that they have to do as well. So my suggestion would be 6.
Okay.
I'll definitely call and, reconfirm or change as needed, but I just think being realistic in those expectations would put us at 6.
So, Madam Chair, let me just ask if we know that the leadership met last night. We know that the Senate leadership had previously expressed that they would be coming to that meeting with a proposal. They did not.
Well, Senator,
Senator Nelson, if I can just finish my question to you.
Madam Chair,
please.
I cannot speak for a meeting that I did not attend.
Madam Chair. The public record is the Senate failed to show up with a proposal last night. We all know that. Not asking whether you attended. That's just the public record. I'm asking if you have any direction from your leadership as to whether or not the Senate is here to work on these provisions and pass some sames and similars today.
Chair Dabney.
Senator.
I think it's foolish to get into what happened and what did not happen. I will state that the Senate believes it is the House's turn to come back with a counterproposal. But I think it's foolish for us to waste our time in that arena. What I can tell you is the Senate is very interested in continuing on with the education bill that we have in front of us, which includes the provisions that you have brought forward today. I just think it is... I think it is not helpful and is partisan politics to play into those type of things that are happening in leadership. You and I are both waiting for the target that is decided by our leadership. And let's make no mistake about it. We think we have a lot to deal with. We have a pretty slim bill. You have a pretty big bill. But think about leadership. There's $12 billion of difference between the House governor's proposals and the Senate proposal. That's a major obstacle to overcome. They're either going to have to figure out how to reduce some of those aspirational proposals, or they're going to have to figure out how to raise revenues to pay for it. I do not believe that injecting what we must do or injecting what they are attempting to do into what we must do is helpful. So I can guarantee you the Senate is looking forward to working on the items that we have before us. And as all, hoping that our leaders are able to pull together what those necessary pieces are for us to move forward.
Well, Senator, I wasn't attempting to be partisan. I was just dealing with what's in the media. And my question was, let me back up. My assurance to you is the direction from my leadership is get work done. And today, it's the direction that I've been getting from my leadership all along. So my question to you was, what is the direction you're getting from your leadership, given that they had said they would come with a proposal last night? They didn't. There's a gap there between what they said they do and what they did, and I'm testing what their direction then to you is as a chair.
Yes, Chair Gaffney, as was evidenced in that I had the gavel on Saturday, and our Senate members either stayed here and drove home 4 hours on Saturday because we believe this was important. Not only that, I drove back up from Rochester on Saturday because we believed it was important. That is the message that is coming from our leadership, and I know that that is everyone's goal, is to get as much work done as possible, but also know that we need some clarity from leadership before we can tackle so much of what is in front of us. So that is the message from my leadership and the message and the assurances that you have from the senators on this education committee.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson, that's reassuring, and thank you for that. Senator Eichhorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say a couple pieces, actually.
Please.
First thing, I think it's a little disingenuous to say that it's all the Senate's fault. I think everybody's trying to figure out how to work with the new administration, and Senator Gazelka and Speaker Hortman and Governor Walz are all trying to figure out how to work together. I think there was some expectation that both sides would come with an offer. We didn't see that happen, so I think it's a little bit unfair to throw one side or the other under the bus. I think both sides are probably at fault, but I think everybody in this room will be happy to know on our environment conference committee where I just came from, the room that everybody's meeting and all of the leadership is right across from that, and they have been in that room in and out basically this entire morning. So I do know that negotiations are happening and forthcoming, so unfortunately we do have to wait for them. Unfortunately, it's a hurry up and wait, but everyone should be happy to know that those negotiations between our leaderships are happening.
Well, that's reassuring to hear. Thank you. Thank you for having eyes on the doorways. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say, one, we have members that drove really far, too. In fact, Representative Sanstead gave up her Mother's Day to be here. So it's our side of the aisle, and Representative Erdahl have to drive quite a bit. So I just want to keep that in mind. Everybody's here to work. And I do want to make a clarification on numbers. It's not a $12 billion difference between our budgets. It's just under $3 billion. And I have to reiterate what Representative Pinto said. We're not trying to bring what's outside the room into the room, but we're all waiting patiently for targets because our districts need to know what they're going to do for their kids next year. Yeah. And that's very, very important and paramount for our committee. And we need to make sure that we keep the eye on the prize here. And as you said, our bills still have a lot of other stuff in it that we could be working on right now. Mm-hmm. So that's why we want to come back, and I think maybe just for the benefit for everyone in this room, too, and folks watching at home, we should probably maybe set a time that we should come back, regardless of what's happening, just so people have something to count on,
sure.
Since there's so much right now that we can't.
Well, Senator, I heard 2 o'clock from you.
Chair Gaffney.
Yes, Senator.
And just to clarify my comments, that the $12 billion figure I was referring to is the $12 billion that are required in taxes. So it's a $12 billion tax question that is so important to what we do here today for this upcoming budget and, of course, in the tails as well. And my suggestion about 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, was that hopefully that we would be able to come back at 6 o'clock. That is the intention.
All right. With that, seeing no further questions or comments, the chair or the conference committee stands in recess until the call of the chair, approximately 6 o'clock. Thank you. I'd like to call the conference committee back to order, folks. Don't panic yet. Senator Weber, good to see you this evening. Thank you, sir. Chair Nelson, do you know if Senator Jasinski is going to be joining us? I know the transportation conference committee is done for the evening.
Thank you. Chair Dabney. Actually, he's also called into a leadership meeting, which was going to be at 6, but it got backed up. So he will be coming, but I don't know how long that leadership meeting will be taking.
Okay.
So
I do want to credit the Senate. While we were chatting about the lack of movement, the Senate actually moved, particularly in the K-12 area. Offering $75 million more to your target, bringing it up to 286 million, which I think the governor categorized as, I don't have the quote down, but as an acknowledgement by your leadership that they were underfunding education. Senator?
Chair Dappy, I'm going to just kind of set that comment aside a moment. And I do want to acknowledge the fact that on Saturday, when we were here, we Senate brought in two pages of same and similar. It's a document of two pages. We adopted about 90% of that. I thought it was a productive session. And I think today started out as a productive session as well. And, you know, one of the challenges is leadership has not set those global targets yet. And, of course, we thought they were going to be here on May 6th. You know, unfortunately, it's not one party's fault. We have divided government. Of course, that means there are big issues. And as I said earlier, there's about a $12 billion issue in tax increases between what the Senate proposes and what the DFL proposes. But, you know, this is not a one-party fault. It's divided government. There's big issues. It's going to take some time for them to figure it out. Of course, we want them to figure it out sooner. But because of the tardiness in the targets, which we thought would be coming on May 6th, you know, my original plan was to work in a totality. But looking at the timeline and the calendar, of course, I think we cannot wait for targets before we look at that whole package. And that's why we have framed up tonight, and we are ready to frame up a non-controversial bill that looks at sames and similars that were in each body. So things that were both bodies addressed the issues, and we might have some differences with those. But however, what is not going to work, I just want to emphasize this, partisan attacks, bullying, and disrespect will not work towards being productive. And I want to be very clear that the Senate will not tolerate that type of incivility. So if that continues, we will not be here. We will not be here. We will not be present for those type of partisan attacks. But if you are ready to work on things that are in both bills, and we're ready to work and work towards as much as we can while we await for our leadership and our leaders to come up with those joint budget targets, we are here. We're ready to go. And we have in front of you a proposal for you to consider. And we'll, if I could, you could, we could turn that over to the Senate if you'd like to just have that proposal described.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you for that. I do hope that the you know, one of the guidelines in my committee this year was respect for members, respect for staff, respect for the public, respect for testifiers. I do hope to see that reflected out of the Senate as we go forward. That would be appreciated as we go on.
You can count on it, Chair.
That would be refreshing. I do think that we've been devoid of partisan attacks so far. I hope that that continues. I do think the newspaper, you know, the media, keeps us abreast. I do also hope that you're not setting a standard for a small, weak bill that does not meet the aspirations of our students and their families, and does not meet the needs of employers, and does not meet the requests of communities for services that will strengthen the communities, build opportunity for their youth, and set Minnesota on a path forward that we can, I think, all aspire to. With that,
Chair Dabney, I'm not exactly sure what you said there, but we'll give you some grace. We're ready to work, and I think we should get forward with that. We should not be trying to frame one another's words nor ideas. That's something we don't allow on the Senate floor, and I'm sure the House has similar provisions, not imputing motives or any such thing. And I suggest that we get to work, look at the proposed adoption we have before us, but I will remind the chair that we will not be part of any partisan attacks at all. So if that's where we're going to go, we're going out the door. Well, if we're ready to work, we're ready to work.
I'm glad that the Senate has come ready to work.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, let's go back to the items for discussion, May 13th, 2 p.m. document. And we have Article 3, Section 58 on the House side on page R47.
That's not in the proposal we brought you, sir, Mr. Chair. We brought you the proposal from 6:30 this evening.
Yes.
Did you not get a copy?
No, I did, but okay. Madam Chair, I would move Article 3, Section 58 on page R47A3.
Mr. Chair.
This relates to records of treatment of minors, and you'll recall this is the privacy protection for children who've experienced maltreatment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
are you,
Nelson.
Are you ignoring the proposal that the Senate worked on and brought to you this evening?
Madam Chair, no. I was, well, first of all, we have a motion on the floor, so obviously we can't divert to some other set of proposals. We'll have to dispense with this motion first. I was simply starting where we began today at 2 o'clock with the 2 o'clock work, and then we can work through, and as we come across those Senate provisions, we can deal with those amendments at that time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
The Senate will be voting no on all of those provisions.
All right.
We have provided you with, in fact, we spent a significant amount of time bringing back a proposed adoption for you, you have the gavel, and so you definitely will be able to chair the committee as you wish.
Right. Well, Senator, you just indicated that the Senate was here to work.
I think you're right.
With that, those in favor of adopting Article 3, Section 58, please respond with aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
Division?
Division. A division being called for. Those in favor of the motion, please signify by raising your hands. Those opposed? Oh, my hearing is just not what I thought it was. All right. The motion does not prevail. I will now move Article 3, Sections 45, 46, 47, 48, and 49. This relates to grants to prepare American Indian teachers.
So, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Senator Nelson?
That would be the, let me find it here, the A44 amendment. We'll start with that.
Okay.
Or the A43 amendment.
A43. So the for members in the public, the SCH 2400 A43, which amends the House language beginning on page 132, line 4, if I'm understanding that correctly. Why don't we give folks a moment to find that, so we all know what we're talking about before we vote.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, maybe we can have
Representative Youakim?
Partisan staff walk through this, because I'm having a hard time, because one of the notations is the note number and saying you're accepting language, but then the amendment goes to the Senate file, so I'm getting a little confused.
Oh, perhaps you want to back up the
Senator Nelson?
Mr. Chair, the Senate does accept we've got a motion on
what,
the floor.
What's
first.
The clearest way to walk through the amendment and its impact on the
sure.
language?
Please. Actually, we had a pretty healthy discussion on this earlier this afternoon, and this has to do with a priority when awarding scholarships. Mm-hmm. The grantee institutions and the contracted partner institutions must give priority to those students who are progressing toward an Associate of Arts or a bachelor's degree. And then the second provision is that students progressing towards the master's or doctoral degree, if they were enrolled in the degree granting program prior to May 1, 2019. And I believe we have that cleanup language, so the provision has been cleaned up a little bit from what we discussed to adopt the Representative Pinto's suggestions as well.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the Senate putting this together. I think if we were to move forward with the idea of prioritizing associate and bachelor's recipients, then this seems like this would be appropriate language. I guess I'm still trying to understand, though, why, and my apologies, I think I may have come in the middle of that discussion earlier, but just to understand why we would not give equal priority to students at whatever level they're at. And again, especially since I guess I'm still interested in any input that may have been received from our American Indian community regarding this, since this is, in fact, those teachers.
Senator Nelson?
Mr. Chair, perhaps the Senate or the chair would like to hold a recess so you could discuss this with your members, also get some further input if you like. That was really the genesis of the Senate proposal that we've put together to allow you and your members to go through, to take a look at this, call some of those folks that you have some that you want to speak to about this. I think that's a good idea. If that was something the chair would like to do, I think that would be a good use of time so you could go through those type of initiatives with your members.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, Representative Pinto. Representative Erdahl.
So I wonder if just in the meantime, though, could the Senate provide the reasoning for why we would prioritize those students at the associate or bachelor's level rather than encouraging the graduate studies, just to sort of what the justification would be for that. That would be helpful.
So I think to Representative Youakim's comments earlier about career changers who might already have a bachelor's. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair and Ms. Chair, I believe. So the intent is to use funds that are targeted to those who would not likely be able to become involved in teaching our students. We want to get more teachers of color into our schools, into our teaching professions, and the impetus is to resources are always limited to first priority to prioritize those who are beginning that step in education preparation, which would be your associate of arts and your bachelor's degrees. We do know that there may be some career changers, and surely after we get more data, as we described in our afternoon session, there may be a reason to do that. But right now, that was, even as I said, even one of the pieces in the 2017 Teachers of Color bill that that the Senate put forth last year, or in 2017, we are not really right now collecting the data so we know what works and what is really going to help us achieve our goal. So I believe certainly Chair Youakim's position to make sure that career changers are able to also go into the teaching profession with grants from the state. I again believe our first priority is to get more to target resources to those who would not otherwise be able to do that. And quite frankly, when we come back and have some more data, it could very well be that there are career changers who might be impacted by this. But at this point, we just don't know. And it's just a point to always target resources to get the biggest results and to focus on students and, in this case, get more teachers of color into our schools. So we would be able to do so funding at the associate and the bachelor's level. The master's and the doctorate level are certainly more expensive courses, but we also think that someone who is pursuing a doctorate degree may have the ability to have some skin in the game to help them go back to school for education preparation.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you. Just briefly, I wonder if maybe it would make some sense then to prioritize those who are new to teaching and then sort of whatever level they're at, if that's the goal. I know there's some other folks with hands up, so that might be something for us to consider.
Representative Erdahl.
A couple of things. First, to point out something that might be helpful, there is a $2,500 tax credit for teachers getting their master's degrees in their content areas. Mm-hmm. That may be helpful. And secondly, if you haven't noticed in your email thus far, Ms. Snyder did a fine job and has already got to us some of the grant recipient amounts that we asked about earlier.
So, Representative Erdahl, just to clarify regarding the tax credit, that wouldn't help someone with an undergraduate degree who chose then to go into teaching, because that wouldn't be in their licensure area, because they wouldn't have a license yet. Am I understanding that correctly? Because education is not considered a licensure area.
Right. It would be someone who has a license, has a degree, and is getting a master's degree in what they teach in their content area.
Thank you. Representative Youakim.
Well, just to throw something out there, too, to see if we're going to end up, you know, not a big fan of prioritizing. When I do worry about wanting to have people wanting to come in new into teaching, if they already have a bachelor's, it would not make sense for them to get another bachelor's. It'd actually be cheaper in some cases if you're going into it. I looked into this when I was looking into special education, to actually get the master's instead of going back and getting a full bachelor's again to actually teach. So that is my major concern. But if you really want to prioritize, maybe we should be prioritizing with a bachelor's, associate's, and then the graduate degree, because we really do want our teachers to be fully trained in a four-year program, if is preferable. But my major concern, like I said, was for teachers coming in out of the field that are have changed their passion and really want to, and since we're actively trying to recruit teachers of color, if they come in with a bachelor's and another degree, it actually in some cases is cheaper to get your master's in teaching above and beyond that bachelor's than it would be to go back and get a whole other bachelor's. So you're actually putting more monetary barriers in front of them.
So, Senator, is it the Senate's intention to close the door on indigenous people wanting to go into principalships and in education leadership?
The Senate position is to get as many teachers of color in the classroom as possible. I do want to remind members, we didn't exactly get to discuss that, but the Senate Conference Committee proposal to the House members already includes, and maybe you haven't had a chance to look at that sheet yet, but I do want to make sure you have that in front of you, already includes adopting House Sections 45, 46, 47, and 48 of the House language, and adding on the one Senate provision, which is Section 49. So I do want to make clear that all of those House provisions in the previous language, Sections 45, 46, 47, and 48, are being proposed for adoption. The Senate is only asking that in return that we see Section 49 adopted of the Senate proposal on this particular topic.
So, Madam Chair, do you simply want to move that we, just to move things along expeditiously, we adopt 45, 46, 47, and 48?
That was the Senate proposal that's in front of you.
I'm saying just those, and then we can focus in our conversation on Section 49.
That is fine.
Okay. With that, to clarify for members, Senator Nelson's motion is to adopt Article 3, Sections 45, 46, 47, and 48 of the House bill. With that, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thank you very much. Representative Youakim, and Senator Nelson moves the A43 amendment. Is that correct?
Which I believe we already had on the table.
Yeah, but then we moved over to the one we just did, and so I'm just making sure we've got the Legos all in the right row. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to point out, just so I'm reading this right, all those sections we adopted were actually the exact same language, except for one sentence. So while I appreciate the movement toward the House language, just having 133.1 and 133.2 being different, I just wanted to point that out. Plus, there's a change in the amendment, and maybe it's just technical, or maybe nonpartisan staff can look at it for me. In the amendment, on line 132, page 132, line 4, it reinstates the stricken scholarships and then deletes grants. Is that more of just a technical change or on the section that we just adopted?
Mr. Arneson.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe that it's fairly characterized as a technical change because elsewhere in the House language, these awards to students are referred to as scholarships, and I think it probably was just an oversight in drafting in Subdivision 4.
Representative Youakim.
I thank you, Mr. Chair, and I actually stand corrected looking back at this language. It wasn't even a sentence different. Sections 45 through 48 is exactly the same in the Senate and the House that we just adopted.
Oh, thank you for pointing that out. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'm wondering whether Senator Nelson would consider it a friendly amendment potentially. I guess I'm really taken with the idea that we're trying to encourage folks who are new to the classroom, and so that it seems like that's maybe more the priority than the precise degree. So I wonder if in place of the language here in the amendment, if it would be the must give priority to students who are new to teaching. I want to make sure that I be careful with the language. But if a senator, I'm sure, understands the intent anyway. And I just wonder if that might be kind of get at what we're trying to achieve.
Senator Nelson?
Chair Pinto and Chair Dabney. That does get to the to the genesis of the Senate language, but we will definitely want to further discuss this. And again, this was the, and there were a few other technical changes in those articles that we adopt also of the House language, but this was a very important provision to the Senate, mm-hmm. and we'll be glad to take that under advisement, Chair Pinto, particularly if you want to put that in some sort of an amendment form so we can make sure and look at your language and see how that might impact. I will note that I appreciate the information that we already got from the Minnesota Department of Education about the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program. I think that's how helpful. And I also have some information also from the department regarding the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program. And just to point to that fact that we need better data, which we have talked about before, and I point to my own legislation in that matter, too, needing more data. Of the 134 participants in that Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program, and let us say there should be more, we'd like to see more, especially as we think of other things that have been in existence long before the 2017 Teacher of Color Program, like the Ethel Murray Scholarships. But of the 134 participants, currently only 47 have files at Pelsby. So we really do need to do a better job of watching this data and make sure that what we think we're doing, we're actually getting. So I would be glad to take a look at Chair Pinto's amendment, if he can get that drafted up, and see how that might impact the goal of getting more teachers of color, particularly American Indian teachers, into our classrooms.
If that's helpful, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to work on that if that would be helpful. I don't want to slow things down, but if it would be a helpful thing, then certainly could do that.
So am I understanding that you've, Senator Nelson, that you've withdrawn the A43 to allow Representative Pinto to come up with an amendment to the amendment and for us to deliberate on that a little bit further?
Yes, and I'll want
All right.
to
thank you.
I'll want to deliberate on that with the full team as soon as we get one of our other members here. Thank
okay,
you.
So for the record, Senator Nelson withdraws the A43 amendment. Moving on then, hoping we can continue to find areas of agreement. If we go to Article 8, Sections 3 and 5, these relate to the ongoing voluntary pre-kindergarten program. We're looking at pages R1, and R3. So let's start with R1 in Article 8. And R1, Section 3, Oh, this is the age appropriate, which kind of surprised me that this isn't already the expectation. Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move adoption of the Section 3 of Article 8 from the House version as simply making sure that we do, in fact, have age-appropriate versions from the state-approved menu of kindergarten entry profile measures.
All right. Thank you very much. Discussion to the Pinto motion. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Chair Dabney. Again, the Senate conferees did not go over this language. We spent our time going over language in the proposal for adoption that we provided to you. So the Senate is not prepared, especially without all of our members here, and not having gone through the provisions here to accept this language. And again, if we want to move forward without in a respectful manner, I would suggest that the House look at the proposal by the Senate and simply say yes or no. I can understand why you might want to recess with your members to talk about these things. But the Senate is not prepared to make these decisions without having had the full conference with the Senate. And we had not intended that tonight. What we have is an adoption for you. These are the positions that we were able to walk through, get to that position where language is in both bills, non-controversial, and without significant changes. So that is the proposal that we have before you tonight that we delivered at 6:30. And again, the Senate is here willing to work on these proposals. However, we are not adopting new language that has not been in the Senate bill without further conference on that.
Well, Madam Chair, I can certainly understand wanting to have your full complement review these. Will we be seeing Senator Jasinski tonight so that you
Well, we're not sure what time, but we'd definitely like to. Yeah. But I think more important than that, Mr. Chair, truly, I think, quite frankly, I think it's disrespectful of the work that the Senate did during the recess to not look at those provisions that have been well documented and conferenced with the Senate members, all of them, and to look at whether or not, I mean, I'd suggest you take a look at what we know we can do and do that, not knowing how the House will vote.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
may vote
mm-hmm.
differently, definitely, but I think it's important to look at those provisions in the four articles that we have, one, two, three, four, five, it looks like seven different provisions, more as you look at the different sections that are being adopted within those provisions, and act on those. Let's do something we can do tonight. Let's use our time wisely. Now, if you need to conference with your folks on these proposals, I definitely understand. But the Senate is ready to hear the House's acceptance or not of these proposals.
Well, Madam Chair, we hoped by reviewing all of these provisions earlier today, same, similars, very similars, I think, in your language, awfully close to similars, however we characterize them, that we would be able to move through the full agenda tonight, recognizing that there's times that things have to be set aside, but we're not proposing that we so narrowly target the committee's work to just these few provisions that your side has come back with. We thought we had some good momentum coming out in off of Saturday, that we could get some substantive work done this evening on an array of issues throughout the bill, and that was our hope today. That was our, you know, aspirational, again, as the House seems to be routinely.
So, yeah, so Mr. Chair,
Senator Nelson,
even on Saturday, we listened to the House and set aside provisions that we thought were same and similar that did not want to be acted upon. But tonight, again, you are ignoring what we have prepared and instead insisting upon going through provisions that are only in one bill. And that is not the intent at this point. So at this point, the intent is to look at these provisions that we have discussed. We have a full complement on. And a mixture, by the way, if one took the time to look at all of the articles here, it's two pages of articles that we have looked at, and you'll see there's about an even split, actually, between Senate language and House language, maybe a little bit more on the House language. But again, our point is to act on those things that are not controversial, that we can, that are in both bills, and that should be our starting point. Our starting point should be looking at those things that are in both bills, that and one body, each body has an opportunity to look and to discuss. And that's exactly what we brought to you this evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, we just want to...
I think that's a sign for
that. Maybe that is. Maybe that is.
That is
Matthew, you want to give the senator a little help here?
This is why we need to move.
Yeah, if the senator would like to provide votes for a new
great.
Worked out so well.
I'm so pleased with the new chairs this year. We didn't think about the microphone.
The top part of this.
I think the Science Museum has one of their exhibits includes testing your reaction time, and it's like a yardstick that drops, and you see how quickly you can grab it. It's
yes.
It's very similar here in the Minnesota House.
I believe so.
So maybe what we need to do is get clarity from the Senate as to what work you wish to set aside and not engage on tonight, and then we can recess. That will give us an opportunity to review the amendments that you've proposed. If you wish before that recess to explain any of them so we've got a full and rich appreciation, that might be helpful, or we can just recess and consider them as written, and then return at a time that allows us to continue to work.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I do believe that it would be valuable for the Senate to talk about the proposals that we have in front of you. I also think it might be a good use of time, since we don't have Senator Jasinski back yet, that might be a good time also for the House to recess and talk about these. But I am more than happy to address these now. But if you would, you're...
So, Senator Nelson, before we do that, mm-hmm. would you please identify for us what elements that we reviewed this afternoon that you wish to set aside?
Mr. Chair.
Clarity is a good thing, I think.
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, we did that, and we have for you the ones that we do not believe need to be set aside. That is in the proposal that we brought to you at 6:30 this evening, and those are the ones that we have gone through, and Senator Jasinski was there as well. So all of the senators have gone through. We spent all the time actually going through those proposals, picking out those ones that we believe can and could easily be adopted in short order. But we'll be glad to have Mr. Artisan go through them if you choose.
Well, let's, just for clarity's sake, let's go through. So the Senate wishes to set aside House Article 8, Section 3, House Article 8, Section 5, House Article 8, Sections 12 and 13. I'm wanting to go slowly enough to make sure that we're all tracking along. House Article 7, do you have an amendment for Article 7, Section 1?
Yes.
You do. Okay, so not that. Article 5, Section 4, Article 5, Section 5. You don't have anything on your own language regarding floor plans?
Mr. Chair, I'll tell you why that was. Because, again, the goal and the purpose of the Senate was to take those articles that both bodies had addressed in some way.
Okay.
Not exactly the same, but in some way. Mm-hmm. And so that is why the school floor plans has been set aside.
Okay.
So the point is, let's do the the easiest stuff first, which is let's look at those things that both bodies mm-hmm. discussed, mm-hmm. And that is the proposal that we brought
okay.
for you
so,
today.
Thank you for that clarification. Then again, the Senate wishes to set aside House Article 6, Section 4. House Article 6, there's not a section number for the Notice of Environmental Hazards.
Senator, and again, Mr. Chair, that was a
Senate, Senate section,
provision
of course,
that was not addressed
so
in the
Senate
House.
Section 6, Article 3. House Section 6, or excuse me, Article 6, Section 5.
I think that's on your list, Mr. Chair.
That's on the list, okay. Then flipping the page, the Senate wishes to set aside House Article 1, Section 5, Article 1, Section 6, Article 1, excuse me, Article 3, Section 4, 5, 6, stop me if I'm going too fast, Article 7, Section 7, Section 8, Section 9, Section 10, Section 12, Section 13, Section 14, Section 15.
No, excuse me.
Whoop, okay. That's
on your
why
sheet, you will see Article 3, Section 14 is on your proposal sheet.
Okay, thank you. But Article 15, or Section 15 is not, correct?
Let's see. 15, 16, and 17, and 18 are a block, and those are in your proposal as well, as
so
are, Section 19.
So I'm not understanding your language, Senator Nelson. Are okay. those articles, are those sections you wish to set aside?
No, those
or are they're in the amendment relating to Article 3, Section 14?
Those are on the proposal that we delivered to you at 6:30 tonight, along with perhaps one other amendment
okay.
that you haven't addressed yet.
So we will be considering those tonight.
Yes. That'd
okay, and that's through 18?
And through 19.
Through 19.
Amendment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Article 3, Section 20, set aside, 22, 26, 33, 34, and 35.
A 34 has a fiscal note.
Okay. And then finishing up here, how do you, what's your wishes on Article 4, Section 2? Since it is in both, and that's been
yes.
a bit of the criteria
yes.
here.
Yes, and so you'll see on your proposal sheet, that is the Senate language, Article 4, Section 1.
And that's for discussion tonight.
Yes, that's
okay.
on your
you.
Adoption that we gave to you.
And then setting aside House Articles 4, Section 16 and 18.
No. House Article 4, Section 18, the Senate on your proposal has adopted House language, is sending you House language.
Okay, for consideration later this
mm-hmm.
evening. All right. So now that we've got clarity on that, that was helpful. Thank you, Senator. Why don't you, we've got three, well, do you want to take these article by article on the document that the Senate has provided?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I think that's certainly your prerogative. Mm-hmm. If your members feel comfortable going article by article and adopting or section by section, that's fine. If you feel that they need more discussion, of course, you'll have that ability.
Let me rephrase. The yeah. question I meant to ask mm-hmm. was, do you wish to discuss these article by article before the House recesses to consider them?
Yes.
Thank okay.
you. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Senator Nelson, why don't you take it away with
Mr.
Article
Chair?
3. Oh, I Representative
think,
Pinto.
I think I might have to withdraw the motion that had been on the table earlier. And so
okay.
I do so withdraw it.
Thank you. So whatever Representative Pinto had moved has now been withdrawn. Thank you, sir. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a clarifying question just so I understand. So is it my understanding then you don't want to talk about any provisions we have that are in your bill only or our bill only tonight?
Senator Nelson, I believe that was addressed to you.
I'm sorry, I was hearing a couple
certainly.
Things. Chair
Youakim.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to understand exactly what your criteria are tonight. From what I'm hearing you say, is that you don't even want to discuss provisions of the Senate file that are not in the House file that we may be willing to take.
Senator Nelson.
Chair Youakim, I think what we're seeing here, and we're just starting to see it a little bit, is, you know, the Senate had a very bill focused on living within the current budget that we have, and it was a much smaller bill in many ways than the House bill. Of course, as I said, we have half as many members as well. But the House bill, as you've described it yourself and others, you know, it's an aspirational bill, and you have a lot of things in there, mm-hmm. a lot of policy, a lot of finance, many, many things. The Senate bill is much more focused on really those financial items. We also have some policy as well, not nearly as much as the House, however, but, you know, next year is a policy year. And this year, of course, the focus is on that budget that we're waiting for. So to your question, Chair Joachim, the Senate proposal that we delivered tonight was just that. It was the first crack at those things that are in both bodies. Both bodies had hearings on them. They both are in the omnibus bill. And they are not controversial or waiting upon budget targets. They are those what we would call the low-hanging fruit, those things that we should be able to do and that we should be able to do rather quickly. But already we've almost spent an hour here, and we haven't quite got to that point yet. But that was the intention. And what I don't know is how comfortable House members feel about adopting provisions from a proposal with or without conversation as your House members. And, of course, Chair Dabney certainly knows his House members better, and that their comfort level in adopting the Senate proposal that we brought before you tonight at 6:30. But, again, yes, we were very consistent, Chair Joachim. We did not even put in our own proposals, which the House did not have in the omnibus bill. So we are very consistent in that, in looking for those things that we know both bodies discussed, we thought would be easy things, that there may be a few little things that are different. So we couldn't really call them necessarily sames or technicals. These are smaller items, provisions that differed in each body, but each was addressed. Each of the provisions in the Senate proposal that we brought for adoption tonight to offer to the House were in both bodies.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It gives me a little bit more insight into your approach. What I will say, though, is that we're willing to look at the committee process that you went through, lengthy hearings, just like we did. We happen to have both a policy committee and a finance committee, so that's maybe why you're seeing more policy language. What we put on our sheet, we were very comfortable discussing tonight. I think that that's where the discussion should be, is at this table. And we were very comfortable talking about the few provisions that you had that we didn't, because we know you hashed them out. I'm just having some consternation or maybe question around not being able to even have a discussion at the table on, for example, Article 8, Section 3, where the only language we're changing is from others to other age-appropriate versions. So we picked very carefully things on our sheet, too, that we didn't deem controversial, that were either in your language or our language, so we could have that discussion here tonight, maybe make a little bit more headway past just sames on the sheet, because we got a lot of work to do before Monday.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Chair Dabney, to that point, we do have Mr. Arneson that is ready to go through those provisions that you had asked that we go through article by article. Mm-hmm. And okay. When you're ready, you can call on him, and we're ready to go.
Mr. Arneson.
Mr. Chair and members, if members are looking at the document from the Senate titled Items Proposed by Senate for Adoption and dated today. The first item on that list is in Article 3 on page R8 of Article 3. And it's a section amending reading strategy subdivision. And the subdivision is amended in both bills in somewhat different ways. And the Senate proposes to adopt the Senate Section 4 on page R8.
And Mr. Chair, this is a Senator Claussen bill, again, the offer to the House is to adopt Senate Section 4.
And just to clarify, Mr. Arneson or
Senator Nelson, that's lines 63.1 through 64.3 of the Senate bill. Am I correct? All right.
Thank you. Mr.
Senator, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a substantive question about this, if this is if that's inappropriate. Okay.
Please.
To the chairs.
Let's try.
We'll give it a try. I believe it's coming up a little bit later, but we had discussed this maybe earlier today about the lunch shaming issue, and the Senate had made the point that the House has a version that spells out a number of great detail about making sure that the districts are conducting themselves in a certain way so as not to shame children, and the Senate has a more general statement of purpose, and there's some discussion. We'll get to that. I guess I view this as being the exact opposite situation, where a question that I would have is it both necessary and appropriate to lay out this level of detail about exactly what the dyslexia instruction needs to be and based on the practice standards of the International Dyslexia Association, et cetera, as opposed to simply having the broader statement and establishing that more general foundation as opposed to all these details? It feels like sort of the opposite discussion as the lunch shaming discussion as earlier, and so I'm curious about the response to that.
Senator Nelson?
Oh, thank you, Chair Dabney and Chair Pinto. This is not on school districts. This is our teacher prep programs. So these are teacher prep programs, and it is essential if we are going to make any kind of a dent in our literacy numbers, and if we want to close the achievement gap, the number one thing that would be incredibly beneficial is making sure that our earliest learners receive effective reading instruction. And I'm open for other questions.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm not at all doubting the need to have programs have this kind of instruction in general. I'm just trying to understand the need to lay out in at quite this level of detail for those programs.
Representative Youakim.
Yes, and Madam Chair, this is language that, you know, our section in 14 only changes college and universities to preparation providers. You had a whole nother level about dyslexia, which is a totally different direction. So this is actually language we don't have anywhere near in our bill. Unless you want to talk about some of our other dyslexia provisions, we could probably have a more robust discussion about that.
Madam Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The language is the same except for paragraph C, and also it does speak up in paragraph B about evidence-based and structured reading. Well, quite frankly, we're at a crisis point when it comes to reading instruction for our students. We do not, it looks like, according to the latest numbers, it'll be 2040 before all of the English language art standards for multi-tiered levels of support are adopted. And also, to your question particularly about why is there this specific language about dyslexia, one out of, 20% of our kids, one out of five, are dyslexic. One out of five. It's a significant amount. But what's interesting about this evidence-based structured reading instruction is it is the type of instruction where students with dyslexia do very well. But it also works for kids who don't have dyslexia. So again, it's looking at, you know, how long are we going to sit by and graduate kids that can't read? How long are we going to see kids being referred into special education because they haven't had a programmatic, structured, evidence-based reading curriculum? And we know that it's up to our teacher prep programs to do that. And so it is very specific, but we are at a very specific and dangerous time when our reading rates are so low.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Youakim.
Madam Chair, I could not agree with you more that we're at a crisis point, but I think the crisis point actually starts in our schools with our kids and screening as well. So if we were going to look at this language, I would also strongly suggest we look at Article 2, Section 58, because then that would be a great balance. First, you're talking about making sure teachers are prepared to catch this and they know how to address it. But in our language in Article 2, Section 58, it actually talks about screening children. Oh, sorry, Article 2, Section 8. It actually talks about us screening children, K through second, if they're having trouble reading, so we can catch them in time to see if they have dyslexia. So it'd be a great pairing between the two, making sure our teachers are prepared to teach, but also making sure we're screening our children so that we know where the problems and issues are at so that we can target that.
Senator Jasinski, welcome. Just to orient you, sir, we've had some debate and discussion here. We're working off of this document. I hope you have a copy. And the intent is to understand the Senate position for the House to recess, consider, and then return.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Eichhorn has updated me when I walked in, so thank you, and I apologize for that leadership, and just got done. So thank you.
Any updates?
I can't tell you. We haven't come completely together yet.
Not quite. But getting closer.
We're getting closer.
Good to hear.
Well, it depends on who you ask.
I could see that. Thank you, sir. Do we want to move on to the next portion of your provision? House Sections 15 to 19. The second bullet.
Mr. Chair and members, the next bullet is on page R9 of Article 3. And this is a series of House sections, some of which also appear in the Senate side. And the Senate is proposing to adopt House Sections 15 to 19 as amended by the A44 amendment.
And can you help us understand how the A44 affects that language, please? Ms. Hofer. Yes, of course, finance provision.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So the A44 amendment does essentially two things. So the first I would categorize as more of a technical amendment, and the second would be more of a policy decision for the conference committee. So the first more technical portion would be on lines 1.4 through 1.8 of the A44 amendment. So what this does is, if you're on the side-by-side, page R10 on the House side, line 112, this would insert two additional sentences that essentially help with accounting for background check fees. So the first sentence of the A44 amendment would direct Pelsby to deposit any payments received into an account in the Special Revenue Fund. This is in keeping with current law, though there isn't any direction for them to deposit those funds anywhere. It just says that they may collect the payment. And then the second sentence would annually appropriate those fees that are collected to Pelsby so they could pay for the background checks themselves, because that language doesn't exist. So this is essentially creating the legal authority for Pelsby to accept and then deposit and then pay for the background checks. And the second amendment on line 1.9 of the A44 deletes may and inserts must. And on the side-by-side, that's page R10, line 112.18. So this would require that Pelsby must contract with the Department of Human Services to conduct background checks. Thank you.
All right. Questions for the, regarding the amendment? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, so with that may to must, does that preempt them from also contracting with the BCA if necessary? Because I think that what I heard earlier that they wanted to do, you know, sometimes it might be better with DHS, and, you know, I know Alex, Mr. Liuzzi still is here if we need technical assistance on that.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They could do more, but they could not do less, and maybe we could have our council further elaborate on that if necessary.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Members, it's requiring the Pelsby to contract with the Commissioner of Human Services instead of, I guess, making it an option by substituting the may for the must.
All right. Mr. Luizzi, can you help us out on this? from an implementation perspective?
I can, Mr.
Welcome.
Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. The background check that happens through DHS actually goes through the BCA, so both are covered under this, and the must would be wonderful.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Arneson, I think it's back to you at that, this point, to the third bullet under Article 3.
Mr. Chair, I believe this has already been the subject of some discussion in the committee. This is relating to the American Indian Teacher Preparation Grants. And we looked at the 843 amendment already, but if there are further questions on that, I'd be glad
to answer. Any further questions regarding the 843 amendment from members on from either side? All right.
And then, Mr. Chair,
Senator Nelson.
That amendment was withdrawn.
Is it going to work out?
The A43, but I'm glad to reoffer it. I just wanted to make sure. We had some discussion. The amendment was out there. We had a lot of discussion. Okay. I just want to make sure that I am more than willing to offer this amendment again if, in fact, the House is prepared to move on that.
So at this time, there are no motions in front of the committee.
Okay.
All right. Representative Pinto.
And I'm not going to make one. I'm just going to clarify. I believe that House Sections 45 to 48 have been adopted. So this is about House Section 45. And yes, I'm going to work with staff. And hopefully when we come back, we could have some language for the Senate to look at that would amend proposed amendment A43.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Arneson, Article 4.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the next item on the list is an Article 4, and it begins on the first page of that article. This is a section amended in both the House and Senate bills in somewhat different ways and in kind of three chunks. On page R2, A4, the on both sides, the first section of new language is kind of a distinct idea. On page R3, the middle chunk is a distinct idea, and the bottom of page R3, the last chunk in paragraph D is a third idea, and the Senate recommendation is to adopt the Senate language.
Mr. Arneson, can you help me find the middle piece that you saw as a distinct?
The House amendments in paragraph C, I think, are kind of separate from the amendments in paragraph B and in paragraph D.
So,
House Section 15.
Ms. Pera? All right. So, Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, just so I could understand this right, I'm looking at, you're saying you want to take the Senate language for Section 1, but then that would leave out, just so I understand, the short-term objectives. It would leave out allowing paras to actually see an IEP before working with a student with disabilities. And it would leave out all the training that we're asking for parents to have to be able to work with these students. And then also, unless I'm jumping ahead, because it looks like it's all the same section, under D, that is actually language for the functional behavior assessments as standalone evaluation, which is a big part of the new OM project. And almost has exact language in yours too. Okay, so we're just leaving out as parent may request a school district. You require a parent being able to ask to do the FBA differently, which I just want to make sure I understand the differences. So you're taking out the short-term objectives. You're taking out paras being able to see the IEPs of students with disabilities and ask teachers to make sure they're working with kids that are highly vulnerable, that they understand what their specific needs are, and then you're also taking out all the training for paras that we have in that section.
Yep. So you've identified the differences correctly, Chair Joachim. First, the differences have to do with PACER. So the parents of children with disabilities are again do not support the House language. However, they do support the Senate language, which does not include the language eliminate benchmarks or short-term objectives. The two in the middle that you mentioned, Chair Joachim, both have dollars attached. And as I said, we are not addressing dollars until we have real budget targets. And then the last one as well, Senator Joachim, again, it's the same language as what the House has in paragraph D. However, PACER, again, these are the parents of the children that we're speaking of here, particularly requested that a parent may request a school district to conduct a comprehensive evaluation. So we did not want to remove that option from parents. They do not have to, but out of deference to those parents and their children, that is an option for the parents to request a school district to conduct a comprehensive evaluation.
Representative Yukin.
Madam Chair, while I understand that you may not want to do things that have money attached, you should know that PACER was very supportive of the work on training paraprofessionals and making sure they have the needs that they have what they need to work with kids, our students with disabilities. And then if you look at the language on 160.32 to 161.2, it's at or. So you could do or time during the school day to review a student's individual IEP or to be just briefed on the student's specific needs by appropriate staff. So maybe we can leave that section in there since that doesn't necessarily have to have a dollar amount in there.
Representative Sandstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually going to ask if PACER had weighed in on the training of the paras, and I think that question was already answered. I can't imagine that they would stand in opposition to that. The other question I have is, in the Senate language, line 80.2, it says the individualized education program may report the student's performance on general state or district-wide assessments related to the student's educational needs. Why would we put all this effort, time, money into a program and then not report the data?
Senator Nelson.
And where is that language?
Line 80.2 in the Senate.
It starts on 80.1, but the meat is 80.2.
I'm wondering why we have may versus must.
Again, so that, thank you, Mr. Chair, so that it is an option, again, local control, that they may report. We tried to stay away from mandates to our school districts in the Senate bill.
Representative Sandstead? No?
All right.
Mr. Arneson, the second bullet under the Article 4, please.
Mr. Chair, the second bullet is on page R16 of that same article. And this is a provision that's in the House side only, but is complementary to the item that was just under discussion about reporting student assessments on the IEP. And House Section 18 on page R16 would direct the Commissioner of Education to amend the rules to clarify that to allow but not require that an IEP program report a student's performance on assessments.
Right. Thank you. Article 6, Mr. Arneson.
Mr. Chair, Article 6 is the facilities article. The next bullet on the list is on page R3. This is the provision in both bodies relating to school districts entering energy consumption data into the B3 benchmarking program.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate recommends adopting Senate Section 5.
That seems clear. I trust there are no other questions on that. Mr. Arneson, Article 7.
Next,
final
the
bullet.
Last provision is in the nutrition article, Article 7. On the first page of that article, the Senate recommends adopting Senate Section 1 as amended by the A45 amendment, which I believe members should have. And just in summary, the A45 amendment would require that the policy that a school, that a participant in the school lunch program must adopt, must allow a student with an unpaid meal balance to participate in graduation ceremony or other graduation activities.
Questions? Representative Buick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for adding a little bit more to this, Madam Chair. My question more would be more clarifying. Could you tell me what the heartburn is a little bit on Section C, D, E, and F? Oh, I see C, you just mentioned you change it. So our House language C, the policy must address whether the participant uses a collection agency to collect unpaid school meal debt. Is there a reason why you're concerned about us letting parents know that a school district would be using a collection agency?
Sir, no.
Chair. Actually, the Senate does address that. Line 113.16 through 17 and 18, it does talk about the policy must be in writing and clearly communicate student meal charges when payment cannot be collected at the point of service. And then the policy must be reasonable, well-defined, and maintain the dignity of students by prohibiting lunch shame. So the policy that the Senate is requiring, again, is locally determined rather than a mandate. As I said, the Senate worked very hard not to put additional mandates on our schools. We do believe the Minnesota School Board Association has a number of model policies, but of course we wanted to make sure that there was a local control in how to maintain the dignity of every student by prohibiting lunch shaming. And so that is the intention of the Senate bill, and it does not address the particular point C that you've suggested, but it definitely could. And I would think that our school boards would be very much inclined to do that if, in fact, that were an issue or a concern. So when we go through and we list things, you know, kind of reminds me of when I was an eighth grade teacher, had a student who stood on his desk and was throwing airplanes, paper airplanes. And of course, that's not allowed. And yet, the point that his father made was, well, did you explicitly say that my son cannot stand on his desk and throw paper airplanes? So there are things that we know that are important, and we try and put those out very very clearly, and what those policies, what the end result of those policies must be, and that's what you see in the Senate language. But sometimes I think in legislation we think we must need to list every little piece, and in a sense, it could be actually weakening the policy to say, well, you didn't expressly say that this couldn't be done, and so, or that this should not be done. So there's nothing in the Senate language that would prohibit a school from adopting what the House has said here is regarding use of a collection agency.
Representative Uakim?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, thank you. I'm having a hard time believing setting this simple floor would be that much of an issue to make sure parents know if there's a collection agency that's going to come after them. And I think in the other ones about the other two in our Section D and E actually talk about making sure kids have food, that they should be served something, and that is not addressed in your language. And that is concerning to me, so I'll just put that out there.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm wondering, Senator Nelson, did you have a rule that said they couldn't stand on their desk and throw paper?
You know, I quite thank you,
I'm just waiting for the answer.
Yeah. Well, you know, by the time a student gets to eighth grade, that is not one of those rules that I had enumerated. But what was more telling, perhaps, was that the father thought it should have been an enumerated rule, kind of like running with scissors, you know. But to the question at hand, though, I do want to make sure that the House is aware that in Minnesota, well, actually, it's federal law, any child who qualifies for free or reduced lunch has a free lunch. So even our children who qualify for free and reduced lunch, they also will have food. So that is the federal law.
Mr. Chair?
I actually have a serious question.
Excuse me, my mistake, state law.
State law.
We already have that state law.
You know, my concern is that we talk about lunch shaming, and I mean, it's a very important term. I mean, it is what this is all about, but what does lunch shaming mean? I mean, I know that, Senator, you're concerned about being too prescriptive here, but something that important might mean we don't have a statute that defines it, I don't believe. I don't think that I don't know if the School Board Association has, you know, some type of policy of what it is. And so that's why I think that some of these provisions that the House has that explain in more detail what lunch shaming is should be adopted.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if we do have someone from the school boards or the school board orgs who might want to address this.
Or Ms. Perro, can you help us with any of the background on the statute? Help us. This is not the first year that we've visited on lunch shaming.
Mr. Chair, I believe much of the language that is in, I can't say exactly what the differences are, but the language that is in the House bill pretty closely matched what was in the governor's recommendation and was in the 2018 bill. I believe it was a few years ago that the lunch shaming language was added. I would defer to Mr. Strom, who have a better recollection of the year when the stigma language was added.
Mr. Strom, how's your memory?
Is it in statute or is it?
There is a requirement in statute saying. Let me see if I can find it here. It's current language that reminders for payments of outstanding student meal balances do not demean or stigmatize any child participating in the school lunch program. That piece is current law. I believe there have been questions about what practices are stigmatizing.
Rose Virgil?
So part of what we're talking about is there, but part of it isn't.
Representative Pinto?
I just know that, but understanding from Representative Erdahl's point, that to a certain extent the language in the House and the House version spells out and does provide that definition. Thank you.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, sometimes we do have to be a lot better with our definitions, and I think this language does that. And just to clarify, too, we have rules around kids that are qualified for free and reduced lunch, but this language actually addresses students that have debt. They might not qualify for free and reduced lunch. So we want to make sure that even if a student has debt, that they still get a meal, because we all know that kids learn better when they're fed and they're ready to be prepared to be at school. And they have a whole host of other issues that need to be addressed so that they can learn well. And this is just one of them. So I will stand by making sure that our kids have food at lunch.
Mr. Strom, anything to fill in on timeline? I think was the main question before you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, in 2014, in
in the bill that was passed that year, there was in Chapter 312, Article 19, Sections 1 and 2, there was the change that you're speaking of that also included the change for the reduced lunch where the state pays the additional, as members know, there's a 40-cent charge for under federal law for reduced lunch students, and the change in that year also included the additional 40 cents so that the reduced lunch were at the essentially free on the new meals.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any last questions, clarifying questions before we recess? Seeing none, the committee is, I'm not going to bang the gavel, I've been told not to do that, stands in recess to call the chair. Let's aspirationally 8:30. Thank you. I'd like to call the committee back to order. Senator Nelson, thank you for the opportunity to have some conversation on our side. I'm hoping that we can find some good solid places of agreement here tonight. We now have, I believe, in front of everyone, check me if I'm incorrect, a document entitled Items Proposed by House for Adoption by E-12 Conference Committee, May 13th, 2019, 8:40 p.m. at the top. We organized it. Hopefully this is makes it easier for everyone to follow along the lines of your earlier document. So I'd just like to start, I'd move adoption of Senate section in Article 3, Senate section 4, and House section 8 in combination. Oh, and that's in Article 2, excuse me. House section 8 is in Article 2. So let me do that one more time. I'd move adoption of Senate Article 3, section 4, and House Article 2, section 8. Senator Nelson.
If you could have the House describe House Section 8 in Article 2.
Certainly. Ms. Perra, if you'd help us out, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Article 2, Section 8 is on page R8, and it requires school districts to to screen students not reading at grade level at the end of kindergarten, first grade, second grade, to screen those students for characteristics of dyslexia, and then to screen students in grade 3 or higher who demonstrate a reading difficulty unless a different reason for that difficulty has been identified.
Thank you, Ms. Perra. So picking up, Senator Nelson, on your language about wanting to be focused on students. The intense focus here is catching students early, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, to see if there are, to screen at that stage so that we can catch students as early as possible if there are issues, if there's a matter of dyslexia or perhaps other things that interfere with their reading. Catch them early so that we can get that implemented now and start focusing on students, while the Senate Section 4 focuses on teacher training. Mm-hmm. And so we saw this as a good pair. Let's get focused on the kids right out the door. Let's make sure that future teachers are prepared on dyslexia going forward. So I've moved that for consideration of the committee. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we'll be able to do is, much as we did with the proposal that we gave you, I'd like to hear what the House is proposing and the rationale behind that, and then we will need to talk to Senate members about these particular hearings.
Okay. So to facilitate that, I'll withdraw the motion. And we'll move on to then to the second bullet under Article 3, which is proposes, I believe that's your language that we're accepting.
I don't know how much you have to recess to consider that one, but I'll leave that up to you.
We'll see how it pairs up with what you're suggesting.
All right.
So go ahead.
And then because apparently the Senate was on a roll, the third bullet we also would accept, which is your proposal adopting House sections in Article 3 of 45 to 49, but as amended by your A43 amendment.
Wonderful. All right. And the next one?
Okay. Moving on to Article 4, the first bullet, we would like to set that one aside. There's a fiscal note associated with that, and so we'd like to set that aside for this evening.
For which
Senator one? Nelson? For Article 4, Senate Section 1. So given that there's a fiscal note, we'd like to set that aside.
And did you talk about this?
Yes.
It was agreed to be off the table.
Okay. I have 44 here and 43. Okay. I'm going to, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I'm going to turn over to our fiscal folks regarding a potential fiscal note, which we don't believe there is one. If you want to repeat what article you were talking about there, what
sure.
provision?
So I'm on Article 4, page R1 of the A4, Senate Section 1. Our understanding is that there's a fiscal note associated with that language, with the House language.
Oh,
sorry. That explains the confused looks off to my right. But we'd like to set that aside for later consideration. My apologies. This is the problem with this does bring up the cursive requirement mandate in your bill, because it is the quality of my handwriting that's fundamentally at the bottom of that. And then so the second bullet, R16 of Article 4, House Section 18, we would propose that.
Let's get to that page.
R16 of Article 4. Only Article 2 wasn't so long. This is deals with individualized education programs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'd propose that. Moving on to Article 6. Again, mm-hmm. we would accept that. Your proposal.
That's on the benchmarking.
Yes, I believe
energy
it is.
Energy benchmarking.
R3A6.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving on to Article 7. We are accepting. No, we're not. Okay. Yes. So on this, let me get to that page, because this Representative Juergens put a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of effort into and passion into this issue around lunch shaming. And this is a real priority of his, and we want to respect that. It was part of our building a bipartisan bill. This is also language that the school boards negotiated last year and was in the bill that passed off the House and Senate floors last year.
Okay. So
Senator Nelson,
members,
questions?
Any questions on any of these items before us? We will not adopt them until after we've had an option, a recess to speak to them, but I do want to just see if any members have any concerns or comments about any of the proposals that the House has brought forth tonight. That would be the 8:40 p.m. proposal. Okay. Let's take a short, hopefully, recess.
Can you define short?
Well, I would like to just go right upstairs to 200, perhaps, and see if we can go through this.
Okay.
And I would hope 30 minutes would be sufficient. Do you think I'm too optimistic there?
15.
All right. Okay.
I think Senator Weber would like 15.
Yes.
Somebody for the looks of it.
Yeah. Okay. So if you can recess until about 9:30, we would hope the Senate can be right back down.
All right. We are in recess and call the chair approximately 9:30. Thank you very much. We are back from recess. Members and to the public, we're continuing to work off of the document labeled Items Proposed by House for Adoption by E-12 Conference Committee, May 13, 2019, 8:40 p.m. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the Senate conferees have met, and so I'm going to, just to clarify, if you could number those bullet points, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we'll all start using the same language, make sure we're always in the right spot.
How about if we label 7 as well? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Looking for tomorrow.
Oh,
wait,
we only have 6.
We only have 6. Oh, I'm on, I pulled up the 6:30. Okay.
This is why
we number and date and things like that.
Yes.
Back to you, Senator Nelson.
So here we go. So if I could make sure everyone has those nice little bullet points with a number in front of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right. Okay. So on to bullet point number one. While we're highly supportive of both provisions that are listed here in the offer, both Senator Klassen's teacher prep requirements and also the screening for dyslexia, there's just great concern in the Senate at this point regarding an unfunded mandate. The Senate has worked so very hard not to have any unfunded mandates, but also members want to, and as we've been told, many districts are already doing this, but of course members want to be able to speak to their districts as well, and I think Senator Weber particularly may have had some comments about this.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right. Senator Nelson is correct. Certainly the goal of the testing and that we all, you know, are in favor of. But at the end of the day, and as Senator Wieger can attest to when I served on his education committee, you know, the unfunded mandates, and you heard my first comment here in the first meeting I was at, has always been a substantial issue with me. And I really feel that I want to visit with a couple of my local school districts to ensure that, number one, they are familiar with what would be required, to see if they are doing it. And then at the end of the day, too, before I would vote yes on this, I want to make sure of what this committee's understanding is of what that process is. I don't want us to think we have a one-page testing document and then wind up with a half a dozen pages that the department or someone else decides needs to be greatly expanded in order to accomplish this. And so, anyway, that's my feeling about it, and if my school districts can give me the go-ahead on that, I think we can make it work.
Senator Weber, thank you. I'm guessing that your school districts might be more comfortable with it, with a 3% increase on the formula of the first year and a 2% increase the formula of the second year and $127 million in special education funding?
Mr. Chairman,
what's your guess, Senator Weber?
We've already had that discussion and they know where I stand.
Just trying to make it easier for your greater Minnesota
Thank
school district, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay, so bullet point one, this setting aside.
Set aside. Yes.
All right.
And then thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the next is a bullet point two, and that's on
Article 3, R9. This has to do with much of the Pelsby language and the background checks. And we have an amendment to offer, Mr. Chair, and that is the A44.
All right. Senator Nelson moves the A44 amendment.
And to that amendment, Mr. Chair, this is just actually a little bit of that language to allow the Pelsby background check dollars to go into that special revenue fund.
Okay. Questions to the A44 amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A44 amendments signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then, Mr. Chair, with the amendment, then the Senate is ready to adopt House Sections 15 through 19 as amended.
Very good. Any discussion to the Nelson motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Nelson.
And then, Mr. Chair, we are on the bullet point number 3, and I believe there's some House discussion on that particular. Well, actually, we have the amendment, which I'll be glad to offer tonight if you would like, Mr. Chair, but I also believe the House wanted to set this aside, so I'm not clear if the amendment would be in order tonight, if that's part of the discussion, or if you'd rather have me hold off and offer that at a later date.
So, thank you, Senator Nelson. Why don't we do two things? Why don't I ask Ms. Snyder to come forward after we moved on this language? We learned that there were some concerns that make us want to set this aside until tomorrow. So I'd ask that we'll set the amendment aside and then hopefully tomorrow. But Ms. Snyder, if you can help us with this, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Caitlin Snyder with the Minnesota Department of Education. Based on the conversation this evening, I've reached out to the Director of Indian Education at the Department, Dr. Jane Harstead, with a number of the questions from the conferees. So asking for an update on the Ethel Murray scholarships, asking for an update on the licensure information that was provided most recently, I believe, in January 2018 on the graduates of the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Prep Program. I also asked Dr. Jane Harstead to reach out to the Tribal Nations Education Committee to make sure that we can get some information back from the tribes about what this would look like at the programs and whether or not this would be something that would be supported by the institutions and our tribal partners. So we've an ask out to the Tribal Nations Education Committee to get responses by tomorrow morning, and I would be happy to provide that information to the committee members at that time.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. And Senator, these concerns were raised, it made sense for us, as we referenced earlier, we wanted to hear from those impacted in the American Indian community.
Thank you, Senator Mr. Nelson. Chair. Oh, I think this is a very good idea, and we look forward to getting a fuller picture than either of us had, actually, in these bills. So I look forward to that tomorrow, and am certainly supportive of setting that bullet point 3 aside.
Okay. Thank you very much.
More information. And then, Mr. Chair and members, the next bullet point is number 4. And the Senate is able to – let me just check. I can't read my own notes here.
Did we say yes?
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes,
all right,
yes,
Senator Nelson.
Bullet point 4. Yes, the Senate is able to adopt Senate bullet point 4, and that has House Section 18.
All right. To the Nelson motion, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Nelson.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Nelson.
The final provision for adoption tonight, the Senate is ready to adopt bullet point number 5. That's on the energy benchmarking language. And so I'd like to move the adoption of bullet point number 5.
So page R3A6, Senate Section 5. Any discussion to the Nelson motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Senator Nelson. Mr. Chair, And the next bullet point, number six, the last one on your sheet, has to do with lunch shaming. And the Senate has had a good discussion on this, and the offer that we could bring back would be to take the Senate language and include the graduation language and the language regarding debt collection, both House provisions that we think could be implemented and very helpful. And I know that the chair has some further discussion on that.
Yes, thank you, Senator Nelson. The House would like to see more definition in this area. This is the issue of lunch shaming, as it's called, has been one that's been around for a number of years. We keep thinking we've solved it, and it's gotten to be a bit of a whack-a-mole problem. And so we'd like to see some more definition and clarity on it so that school districts know where they stand and can move forward. So we're in need of greater specificity so that we can hopefully put this issue behind us and, more importantly, behind the students and families of the state.
So we'll move to set that aside.
Yes. Thank you very much. So, Senator Nelson, tomorrow.
Chair Dabney, the Senate plans to convene at 2 o'clock tomorrow. We have a few items on the agenda. We'll hear from a couple additional provisions that were in the Senate bill but were not in the House bill. One of those will be on okay. Mr. Chair, we will be hearing about PTEP and what has been successful and in other states. And then we also haven't had confirmation yet, but we thought it'd be helpful if we can get Mr. John Voss with 287 in to talk about what can be done so that all teachers in our state are able to participate in that online portal of teachers' lesson plans that have been aligned to Minnesota standards. And he's been very they've started doing that on a smaller scale. We'd like to see all of our teachers have access to that.
Okay.
And so, but that's not confirmed yet. And then, of course, we want to hear back regarding the Indian provisions, our teachers of color, particularly our American Indians, and continue that discussion, and then continue looking at other provisions. And, of course, waiting for our leaders to come through with those budget targets.
Waiting and waiting and waiting, yes.
Yes, but we will continue to work.
All right. And we've got a whole host of questions across here. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so that we can kind of know what to expect on the other provisions, is it going to be, again, provisions that don't cost money then but from the Senate? Or I know that was the focus today, that it would only be provisions that don't cost money.
Senator Nelson.
So, Chair Dabney and Chair Joachim, our goal is to, number one, advance those provisions that have some language in both bodies. Okay. And I know what you're thinking there, Rep. Erdahl. And then also those that do not have dollars attached. And we, again, are wishing those legislative leaders and the governor great speed as we approach our constitutional deadline. I applaud the fact that they were hoping for those budget targets, joint budget targets by May 6th, but now we're here on May 13th, and we have to move ahead as much as we can, but we cannot get into those finance areas until we know exactly what finance we're dealing with, how much that is, and how it would be paid for.
All right. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Folks may remember that we had a discussion maybe on Saturday, I guess, about a provision relating to the Special Revenue Fund for scholarships and this question of It was the directive from the finance chair in the Senate to have the provision worded a certain way because of budget rules. We had checked with staff, with our fiscal staff. It seemed like there may have been a disagreement between the different fiscal staffs, and we've now gotten some more information. And so what I would maybe ask for both sides if we could do is just to check again with staff, because I have the impression there may actually be some joint suggestion to us about how exactly to word that to have it become in compliance with budget rules, et cetera. I may be wrong about that, but if we could check, that may be something that we can dispose of upon advice from our respective staffs.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Pinto. I think that's a good idea to try and get some greater clarification on that. And I also wanted to just, I know it's clear, but wanted to make sure my language was clear on that the two testifiers that we will have, one or two, we know those are not provisions in the House, but we want to make sure House members have access to what the Senate, why the Senate has had those provisions included. But then if we get to additional proposals or adoptions, again, we'll be starting with those items that are included in both bodies that don't have fiscal notes. Will be the order of priority.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Senator Weaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto and I have been discussing the kindergarten assessment potential provision in the Senate bill, but we've talked just overall about early childhood and various reports that are in play, and we've come up with some other options for language work with the department, and you know, and any of us can meet and talk about different areas, but I think we're coming up with some good language that I'm sharing with some others, and you know, just a heads up and appreciate Representative Pinto's active leadership on that.
Well, thank you both for the initiative and the collaboration. Much appreciated. With that, we are adjourned till 2 p.m. tomorrow, did you say? 2 p.m. tomorrow. Good night, all.